Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Go. It is Tuesday evening, and what we didn't get to last night, maybe we'll get to tonight, plus some other stuff, new stuff, that kinds of stuff. We've sort of got fresh Morans left over from Moran Monday. You never know. There's too much stuff out there to deal with in any one given night. We've got some follow-up stuff on, and, you know, I hate to even fool with it. It just seems so tawdry and slippery and slimy. But there is some follow-up stuff on the Sarah Palin nonsense fraud money laundering operation that she's running. Got a Laugh over at Political Carnival has sort of figured out who the ghost-writing bloggers are on Caribou Barbie's Facebook page. You know, because Caribou Barbie's Facebook page doesn't look like it's been written in crayon, so therefore that means that it's not really Sarah Palin writing it. So we can talk about that. We most assuredly can. And in the grand scheme of things, it may wind up being the lighter side of the discussion this evening, because there's all kinds of creepiness, nastiness out there. Something that came this way by listener Mike was featured on Democracy Now and probably deserves some discussion. America's secret Afghan prisons investigation unearths new U.S. torture site, abuse allegations in Afghanistan. Hey, why did I chuckle? That's just sickening. But, yeah, in case you were wondering, it's still going on. Maybe not as bad, but it's definitely still going on. Then there's the story of the story of the Scientology missionary volunteers going to Haiti. That's another beautiful one. I guess they all kinds of bad thetans in bad thetans just banging around, or whatever it is, planet witch knot. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's just fraud, just another religious fraud. But they're down in Haiti mucking things up. So we've got that going for us. What else? How about a leftover Moran, like I mentioned? You know, Morans... Right-wing morons, they stay forever fresh, at least in my book. Their lunacy just somehow doesn't grow old. And were it not for just how dadgum dangerous these creeps are, they'd be funny. In this particular instance, we are talking about Virginia Delegate Bob Marshall. And of course, the Virginia State Senate and the Virginia House will likely finalize legislation, if they haven't already, that would try to take the teeth out of any sort of federal health care reform, which is just disturbing past disturbing, using the legislative time of an individual, well, in this case, Commonwealth, the Old Dominion, to make sure that they continue to give the people of Virginia a good screwing. In this particular instance, it is Virginia Delegate Bob Marshall and he introduced the Virginia Healthcare Freedom Act that declares an individual mandate, you know, the idea that everybody has to have health insurance, unconstitutional. Now, yesterday, Marshall gave an interview, and, well, it's one of those moments where it is far better that I let the lunacy speak for itself than to try to describe the lunacy to you. But I can't, because while it was playable a little bit ago, somebody has... See, that's what these wingnuts do. They file a copyright claim with YouTube to keep it from, keep their lunacy from getting spread around. But that's okay. We've got a transcript. Now, Bob Marshall, a delegate in the Virginia House, has declared that health care reform is a criminal act. Now, never mind the fact that, well, from my standpoint, I think blithely standing by and watching 45,000 of your fellow Americans die grisly, agonizing, miserable, needless deaths for want not of access, or not of, but simply want of coverage. Watching 45,000 of your fellow Americans die every year, that seems kind of criminal to me. But not to Bob Marshall. To Bob Marshall, right-wing patriot, to Bob Marshall, having health care for all Americans, that's the criminal enterprise. Mobsters used to offer protection to business owners. So when Congress says that if individuals don't become customers of businesses that contribute to them, to me that crosses the line. For me, it is hard to distinguish what is going on in Washington, D.C. from criminal activity. Not too long back, speaking at a states' rights rally in Richmond in the Old Dominion, Bob Marshall offered this. This is a fight over whether you are a citizen or you are a serf. Really? Okay. This Obamacare is not a fight over health insurance. It's not even a payback for political help. This is a fight over whether you are a citizen or you are a serf. It's not your wallet that they want. It's your soul. It's your family. We are not going to allow this to happen. Don't call these folks atheists. They believe in themselves. What time is it? Yeah, 8 minutes after. I'm 8 minutes into the program, and already I'm wanting to beat my head on the table. Ouch. Don't call them atheists. They believe in themselves. And they're mobsters. You know, I guess it was last night that Stephen Colbert, in gloating over his Grammy, referred to the President of the United States as Black Hitler. Sounds like one of those cheesy ass movies from the 70s. But no, this is quite real. They're describing the Obama administration and Democrats in Congress as mobsters. Mobsters used to offer protection to business owners. So when Congress says that if individuals don't become customers of businesses, they contribute to them, to me that crosses a line. For me, it's hard to distinguish what's going on in Washington, D.C. from criminal activity. Which is, in a way, I suppose, understandable, because in so many ways, given their profound ties to corporate America and the buyout of what is left of our experiment in self-government, everything looks like criminal activity to the Repiglicans, because everything they're involved in largely is some kind of criminal activity. But that's, you know, that's just a starting place. Just a starting place. And I guess these guys have dead stop and full on full steam ahead, all, you know, 100% throttle down, up, whatever you do with the throttle. There's no middle ground with them. So just as Bob Marshall says that health care in America is a mobster plot, so too do wingnuts in the House. Well, you know, there was some testimony today about don't ask, don't tell. And Admiral Mullen came out. No, not like that. I mean, this is about don't ask. No, he didn't come out. Admiral Mullen said today that he thinks that don't ask, don't tell is essentially unfair. And, of course, the right wing immediately went into straight up 100% all out, the total commitment, 100% sweat condition alpha over that. Let's see, who? Tony Perkins.
Norman!
No, Tony Perkins, head of the Family Research Council. The Family Research Council. He had a hissy today, saying, well, never mind. Okay, maybe this one will work. Let's try this instead.
Chairman, and just as was stated by my friend Senator Udall,
this is Saxby Chambliss. A little reset here. This is Saxby Chambliss of Georgia. Saxby Chambliss of Georgia, who ran for Senate from Georgia by morphing a Vietnam veteran's face into that of Osama bin Laden. Yeah, that's Saxby Chambliss. And he's talking here, Senator Saxby Chambliss, patriotic American who never could quite get around to serving his country. He's going to talk at us a little bit about how important it is to keep him queers out of the military. You go on now, Sarah.
Policy to adhere to, and that's what we have in place in the military with Don't Ask, Don't Tell right now. To you, Secretary Gates and Admiral Mullen, you're in a tough spot, and we understand that. This is an extremely sensitive issue, and everybody on this committee, I'm satisfied, is very sensitive to the issue, both inside and outside the military. In the military, it presents entirely different problems than it does in civilian life, because there is no constitutional right to serve in our armed forces. And today we know we've got gay and lesbian soldiers serving. They've served in the past, they're going to serve in the future, and they're going to serve in a very valiant way.
Because we just can't figure out no way to isolate them. If they just, I don't know, show up at the recruiting station in a pink tutu or something, maybe we could keep them out. You know how that is, but they won't do that for us. They only want to wear the pink tutu when they get into the military and everything. That's what the problem is, yeah. It's a sensitive situation. You know how it is with them homosexuals. They're sensitive, all the time being sensitive about how homosexual they are. It's a sensitive situation, Mr. Admiral. Secretary Gates, I understand you're in a sensitive position. Sensitive.
But the primary purpose of the armed forces is to prepare for and to prevail in combat should the need arise.
And how in God's name are we going to prepare for combat should the need arise if everybody be redecorating the barracks? Gracious sakes. It's a sensitive problem.
Military life is fundamentally different from civilian life, and that military society is characterized by its own laws, rules, customs, and traditions, including restrictions on personal behavior that would not be acceptable in civilian society. Examples include alcohol use, adultery, fraternization, and body art. If we change this rule of don't ask, don't tell, what are we going to do with these other issues?
The whole military going to be tattooed up. And see, that's going to be such a shame because, you see, ain't no Marine ever got no tattoo because they got limitations on the body art. Yeah, there's no tattoos in the military. Nobody got a tattoo. No body art. Mm-mm. And no alcohol in the military? No, we ain't got no alcohol in the military neither, because ain't no drunken sailor ever been hauled back aboard ship by some member of the shore patrol half and that seaman be half liquored up out of his mind. That ain't never happened, because we got a good, honorable, godly, upstanding military. Hallelujah, praise Jesus. And the homosexuals going to ruin it all. They're going to be a bunch of tattooed love boys.
Forces must maintain personnel policies that exclude persons whose presence in the armed forces would create an unacceptable risk to the armed forces' high standards of morale, good order and discipline, and unit cohesion. In my opinion, the presence in the armed forces of persons who demonstrate a propensity or intent to engage in homosexual acts would very likely create an unacceptable risk to those high standards of morale, good order and discipline, and effective unit cohesion and effectiveness. I'm opposed to this.
How can you argue with such impenetrable, absolutely rock-ribbed, lead-pipe cinch logic as what Senator Saxby Chambliss is offering up here? It's unassailable. Going to let them if we let them homosexuals serve openly in the military, next thing you know, it's going to be wall to wall, Barbara Streisand and Liza Minnelli, and we ain't going to get no fighting and killing done. It's unacceptable. That's what it is. Unacceptable.
Change, and I look forward to a very spirited debate on this issue, Mr. Chairman.
So, Mr. Perkins, let me bring you back in here.
Yeah, here's Tony Perkins.
Are you opposing it because you're afraid of what will happen to the military? Or are you opposing it more as a social concern of the expansive role and rights of homosexuals?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. If you've seen what this administration has laid out, a part of the agenda to actually tear down the Defense of Marriage Act
Norman?
Is the first to impose this adoption of this new policy on the military. But if you talk about polls, let's go back to the Military Times in 2008 had a poll of active duty military members. 58% said they were opposed to overturning this policy. And many have said that this will cause them to reconsider whether or not they stay in the military and will have an impact.
See, the homosexual is going to run the straight people out of the military. We'll be able to just be, we won't be able to defend ourselves against nothing.
Upon recruiting. I mean, this is an issue of retention and recruitment for the military, and ultimately could lead back to the imposition of a draft in order to fill the number of quotas in the military.
Now, Mr.
I wish they'd pick a theme and stick with it, because it used to be that if you let the homosexuals in the military, then all kinds of homosexual prostitutes would be blackmailing our national security right out from under us, because them homosexuals can't help but run their mouths when they're in the midst of homosexual passion and subject to being blackmailed. And so wasn't that what they used to argue? But now it's something different. Now they've come up with, well, all the straight people will leave the military. And we won't be able to have no retentions. This is an issue of retention and recruitment for the military, and it ultimately could lead back to the imposition of a draft. Well, what's the matter, Tony? Oh, wait a minute. You're afraid your precious little son or daughter might get drafted and have to serve the country that you like to flog? And yeah, okay, we get it. You know, the more I think about it, and I'll probably get hate mail over this, but I'm beginning to think that a draft is probably far better than what we have now. With a well-defined option for people of peaceable nature and conscientious objectors to serve their countries peaceably as opposed to going off and learning how to kill folks. But we got a couple more minutes here. Let's finish off.
Frank, I'll let you go ahead and get in there, because I know you have something to say, at least about that poll he quoted.
Thank
and also, you just interjected something about, we're talking about the draft. We go from letting gays serve openly to a possible draft, you just suggested. Go ahead, Mr. Frank, I'll let you respond.
I don't know how. These are fear tactics. Polls show in Canada and Britain that when they asked service members if they wanted to serve with gays, two-thirds of them said they would refuse, absolutely refuse. But when they actually lifted the bans anyway, about two people, not the thousands predicted by the polls, actually left. Because polls don't predict behavior, they express values. And the polling is instructive, but we're not asking the right question. When you ask the military about their sentiments, you need to be sensitive to their concerns. But the question is not, do you feel like serving with gays? It's, are you capable of serving with gays? And what the Joint Chiefs Chairman said today is, don't underestimate our troops. They can do this. And the military is not about what some individuals in the military want. It's about what's good for the whole. And what's good for the whole is we need these 13,000 troops.
Yeah, see, but he sounds gay, doesn't he? That's probably, yeah, sure. Wasn't Dr. Nathaniel Frank there? Wasn't he just reasonable? Wasn't he just intelligent? Didn't he sound incredibly well-informed on the topic? Shh, don't tell anybody. That's the problem. In America today, in the country in which you and I live, being intelligent on a topic is no longer a mark of distinction. It is rather like the brand of banished Cain. Oh, look over there. He sounds way too smart. Probably can't trust him. Those smart people, you know, they're bringing America down, trying to make homosexuals. Bring me another beer, Marge. But what he referred to is the fact that since 1993, some 14,000 gay and lesbian servicemen and women have been discharged from military service, not because their hitch was up, not because they wanted to leave, but because it turned out that they'd had sex differently from how the Pentagon likes for people to have sex. Or more appropriately, how the right wing tells the Pentagon to feel about how people have sex. Because the right wing drives the military-industrial complex in this country, and that's, you know, all there is to it. That's not subject to debate. If you and I had some sort of sway over the military, I imagine we would try to get the Pentagon budget, for starters, under control. But lo and behold, we have a president who dare not suggest that we might subject the Pentagon budget to the same degree of scrutiny that he wants to subject the rest of the budget to. No, we're not going to freeze defense spending. Oh, we're going to find more. Oh, we're going to find more money to spend on blowing up brown people. Oh, we're going to, yeah, we'll keep adding to the defense budget because we just don't have enough money in there right now to turn enough the children into their constituent parts. We had another one of those nighttime raids in Afghanistan not too long back, if you recall. And lo and behold, what happened? Yeah, we killed a 3-year-old boy just a few nights ago? Night raid? Yeah, terrorist 3-year-old. But you got Tony Perkins here, on the one hand, who wants to cite an unscientific, put the dot in the box online poll of the military. Oh, they don't want to serve with no homosexuals. That's what he's citing. That's what he's saying. We'll have a problem keeping people in the military. No, nobody will want to stay. And then we'll have to have a draft. And because, of course, he thinks that that will speak to what, liberals, progressives? A draft? We better keep the gay people in the closet. They might come for little Johnny and little Mary and little Susie. We are living in hard times. When we realize that we've gotten to that place in the country where being intelligent itself, by itself, is nothing more than in itself is grounds for grave suspicion of everything from one's faith to one's patriotism, to one's goodwill towards one's fellow neighbors. I don't know about our neighbor there, Marge. He looks pretty smart. Don't know if we can trust him. Sure wish we had morons like us moving in next door. Next thing you know, there'll be all kinds of college people around us, and professors and scientists and stuff, and then, well, there goes the neighborhood. They'll be talking about things like facts instead of all the fairy tales that we prefer to believe. On we go toward the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hello from East Tennessee.
Well, hey, Kate.
Hey, that's a hard act to follow. Your comedy tonight is amazing.
Well, I was feeling kind of dry. I don't know.
No, it worked. I was sitting here laughing out loud myself. Well, I wanted to just call in briefly to check in with some. I don't want to get into the hard news. You know how I get. I rant too long and too hard. I just wanted to give a little bit of an update, like some gossip from the Gulf Coast. I spent about 2 weeks down there and was over in, I feel a little self-conscious with Haiti going on. People probably not even caring about New Orleans and Mississippi.
No, don't feel self-conscious.
Well, anyway, I just wanted to go through some of the things that I learned. I tried to make a concise little postcard here to just get in and get out of it. That I heard in a meeting and then found it on the internet that 77 in Mississippi we got 77% of the people back in housing. Whoopee. I just thought,
well, that's a long way from 100%.
Well, yeah. And that I didn't stay down there because the office that I'd worked in for the last few 3-4 years got funding cut and cutbacks, and they're still working with clients, but they're going to be doing FEMA clients until March, but there just wasn't that much work for me to do in that area, and there are still other agencies that are working, but the case management that we were doing, that the several agencies were doing around on the coast was FEMA had never done case management and recovery before, and so in Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas, it was a pilot program for a national model. And some of the folks in D.C., we did stats just like crazy and good record keeping and everything. And the folks in D.C. were very, very amazed. They didn't realize what a good job was, you know, what all it involved and stuff. So we maybe, my agency came out on top in Mississippi, and I'm really proud of that, but hopefully they'll use this model of case management for future disasters, you know, future recovery. They damn sure not doing it in Haiti, but that's not my business.
No, but there are, the Scientologists are on the ground and working hard in Haiti.
And those people from Idaho that went down and got a busload of kids and took them, oh, God, across the border. Gee, I really don't want to talk about this because it gets me crazy. I just did hear that FEMA, early on after the quake, heard that USAID and FEMA were in a big argument about who was going to be in control. And I just threw up my hands and thought, okay, I'm shutting off my ears and I know FEMA's down there. Never mind. I don't want to talk about it. So anyway, and Louisiana, they're starting to let go some of the money that was allocated, and Louisiana just got their first allocation just last month, and so, but that doesn't do anything for me either, because I think in, like the politics are as usual in Louisiana. They're having a mayoral election, and the viable candidates are I don't know whether my friend said he didn't know whether they had threatened him or had something on him or whatever, but the viable black candidate just pulled out of the race, and they have a black woman judge who's running for mayor, but he said she probably doesn't have a chance because the white power.
Well, isn't Mary Landrieu's husband running?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't. There's signs all over New Orleans, but I was so busy in traffic I didn't really get a chance. And then my friend and I were just talking nonstop, and I didn't get a chance to hear any of the details about them. But the white power is just, they're just taking, you know. There's apartment complexes all over the city that are rotting. They're just sitting there empty and rotten. And I said, why are they pulling those down? And he said, well, the people are either too old, or they can't get back, or the owners, or they want to let them sit until the city buys them out, or whatever. But the white power down there are blocking the rebuilding the road home for folks. 53 months after the storm, the vacancies vacancies are unoccupied are over 61,000. That's apartments and empty lots and empty houses. And but that number fell from 33% to 29% unoccupied at between 2008 and 2009. So, yay!
Well, let's see, at 3% a year? Gosh, maybe 10 years from now.
Yeah, that's what people are saying, that it's going to take 20 years. Yeah, well, it shouldn't, but there you go. Anyway.
No hurry.
No. We got those folks all safely tucked away up in Utah and Wyoming and Nebraska, and they've opened their own Creole restaurants already.
Well, I was going to say, it's sad as it is, but I think Utah and Wyoming and Idaho and so forth are better places for being able to being able to get a decent bowl of gumbo, and maybe a little etouffee, or maybe take your andouille recipe up there, or your boudin. it's got to be a net gain for those places.
Yeah, I told you there was a great restaurant of Creole. I got great gumbo and beignets in Helena, Montana, but he started out in Bozeman, and he's dominant culture, so I don't know. He's old Cajun. Anyway, there's a little bit of gossip from the Gulf Coast. I mean, from Biloxi, they took the cranes down at the Margaritaville Casino. It's only about four.
Wait, there's a Margaritaville Casino now?
You're the one who said, Kate, does this just make you sick? Jimmy sold out, now he's going to have a casino on the Gulf Coast.
But they followed through.
They followed through, and they...
Nobody along the way said, this is not a good idea, Jim. No.
No, they didn't. They got about four or five stories up, and all the ground's been broken, and the structure's about... I think it looked, I was in traffic, but it looked to be about four or five stories high, just completely empty, looked like a parking garage. But the cranes have been sitting there all along. And I mean, how do you rent a crane, buy a crane, lease one, and then let it sit unused for months and months and months? Well, they finally took them away, I think in January. But the word was out that, that Harrah's pulled out on the $700 billion deal, and because of the economy, and so there won't be a Margaritaville Casino in Biloxi. I don't know what they're going to do with that building, but the signs are still all up, so I don't know.
Coming soon.
Yeah.
Your tax dollars at work.
As soon as we get the beer cold. But Jimmy's not going wanting for anything. I didn't know this until just last week, that they renamed the Miami stadium down in Miami where the Super Bowl is going to be played is now called Landshark Stadium, because he's in on the deal with the Miami Dolphins. And
what, named after Landshark Lager?
I guess. I don't know anything about beer. All I know is Landsharks are, is it the song, you know, to the right of me, that sharks.
The fins, way. Yeah, the sharks that can swim on the land.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so they've renamed, this is like the sixth or seventh thing. I don't know anything about this. But the stadium where is Jimmy's name. I mean, it's Landshark. So I thought, well, Jimmy's not going wanting for anything. So there you go. I just kind of leaves a funny taste in my mouth. Speaking of taste, I called my friend and I said, where do you want to go for lunch? And he said, well, just pick me up and we'll go. And there's a place called Little Dizzy's in Treme. And it was, I said, well, I'm not really dressed for lunch. He said, no. I said, I'm more like dressed for Waffle House. And he said, this is Waffle House clothes. This is a Waffle House place. And I thought, oh, okay, good. Oh, my God. They've got Creole and they use all regional ingredients. And the chicken, you remember Willie Mae's Scotch House? We talked about that.
Oh, yeah.
The chicken is better than Willie Mae's, I swear. Oh, my God, it was wonderful. They had a huge buffet, and we just, we just looked at each other and said, yeah, let's do the buffet. So we took about 3 hours to eat and talk, and we just go back and get more greens, and we go back and get more beans and rice.
Greens.
And they were just, like, really good greens, too. I mean, oh, my God. And I didn't really understand the bread pudding. My friend said, his just eyes got big, and he's, oh, my God, this is one. It's so good. It's so good. It's just, and I didn't do it. I didn't like it. It tasted like, I don't know. It didn't.
Wallpaper paste?
No. It was had stuff in it that I didn't understand the taste. The texture was wonderful, and it was beautiful, but I didn't.
Didn't work for you.
No. So I just took little bites, and then I went back to the buffet and got the sweet potatoes. They were, oh, my God, they were drop-dead wonderful.
And this would be, by the way, the food porn portion of the program.
It is, yes. Anytime anybody gets the Treme in, down in the 8th Ward, go to Little Dizzy's, and it's a little jazz. The guy who owns it started it years and years and years ago pictures of jazz players all over the wall, as usual.
Well, I had to go back and do a little research, Kate, because I mentioned that absolutely delightful cup of cream of crab soup that I got while I was waiting for traffic to clear.
Yeah.
And I went back and did some digging. All I could remember was that the name of the place was the Filler Up.
Uh-huh.
But it is the Filler Up at 21307 York Road, Parkton, Maryland. And I know we've got some listeners in and around the area. If you get a chance, and it's up off of I-83, man, oh, man, oh, man, go get that cream of crab soup. I'll bet the tomato bisque is pretty awesome, too. Because, you know, the other thing, you know, it was just a block building painted white with some red trim, gas pumps out front. But then I did notice that they got one of those roadside blinky sign kind of things.
Mm-hmm.
And it said, the Soupmeister is in.
Oh, that would have been a clue. Oh, God. Yeah, that was a great story.
And he sells his job. Like I said, I tried to figure out a way to talk myself into going back that way, but it would have been going east to get north, you know, going east to get west. And
yeah, speaking of going north to get east, I on my trip up here, the sausage factory in Alabama was cooking, big old smoke and steam boiling out of the stacks
Kaneka.
I was going to try to say it right. And you had said stop at Lookout Mountain. I thought you meant Lookout Mountain in Chattanooga.
Well, Lookout Mountain kind of goes a ways. It extends all the way down into Alabama.
Right. I noticed that on the map. But when I was looking at, when I got to a place to park at the rest area, I was just down the hill from Lookout Mountain what highway I was on. Anyway.
I-57?
I don't know. Just, like, crossed through Georgia out of Alabama and crossed into Georgia, and then I was in Tennessee. And
yeah, I think that's 57.
It says, welcome to Georgia, and I thought, holy shit, I went to sleep. Oh, I've done that before. I wake up, and, I mean, I come to, and, I mean, I just look around and say, what the hell road am I in? The sun went down, so I don't know what direction I'm going. Anyway, I had mentioned to Malloy, give me one good reason why I should go up to Lookout Mountain before I head out. And he wrote back and said, it's a war monument. And son of a bitch has lost that one, too. Whatever, some Malloy remark. And I looked in the brochures, and it had a little Starbucks, all the concessions that were up on the mountain, and I thought, a war monument with a Starbucks concession is just a little bit too much for my sense of irony without an audience. I just couldn't force myself to go the 13 miles up the hill.
But you can see seven states.
Whoopee.
At one time.
But the boundary, that's
Alabama, Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia, maybe? And maybe one more. I'm not sure.
No, I think that's it. The boundaries are arbitrary. When my ancestors were there, there weren't no six, seven, eight states. It didn't matter.
Back then the signs just said, see a long way.
I was raised on the prairie in Montana, dude. A long way means, you know, like a long way to me, you know. I know long ways. But anyway, I just couldn't get myself.
Or maybe, I don't know, maybe back then it said C7 tribes. Yeah. I'm working here, Kate, working.
And some of them are heading to Oklahoma, and they ain't happy. But I just, and then I got to thinking, like, why did I make that silly, why did that come in my head that I just can't go up there and do the Confederate memorial with the Starbucks? And my bias is showing. I just, you know, and that's really awesome.
But, you know, that's also where either the father or grandfather of Douglas MacArthur distinguished himself and set the tone for what young Dugout Doug would struggle to become all of his life. That was Arthur MacArthur.
Oh.
Not kidding. Yeah, he was the Battle of Chickamauga or some Battle of Lookout Mountain. He was the guy who carried the flag to the top or something like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, being the empath that I am, I pick up. I can't do battlefields. I just can't do memorials and monuments, and I just can't do that. And I feel really kind of awkward because if I don't clutch my pearls and dab my eyes with my hanky, then I'm being a heretic or un-American, or I'm, you know, one of them northerners. There's, you know, I mean, it's just, I just can't do it. I just don't. Anyway, so I didn't even stop in Chattanooga. I just barreled on through about noon because I needed to get my paperwork over here to the office in Knoxville, and so I know that, yes, I was going to get to volunteer for RAM, the remote area medic people that have a clinic in Knoxville on this weekend, and then one over in the next county and next weekend. And so I got my paperwork in, and he said, yeah, bring it back, and I'm going to start up Friday morning setting up, so I'm pretty excited about that. And that's just the way to mitigate my rage about what those folks are doing to our medical care. And I just want you to say, screw you, keep your freaking medical and your lobby money and all of your talk and all of your crap. Stay in Washington, D.C. Get out of our way. We'll do it ourselves. And the boss said we'll probably have 1,200 people this weekend. We just do free medical. I said,
right, but the sad thing is, Kate, that's all triage. You know, it's immediate, you know, necessity stuff. It's like when that rural dentistry the campaign rolls through somewhere, and 1,000 people will show up for extractions. It's not that, you know, with all due respect, that's not ongoing medical care. We've got to have some kind of fix in this country.
Mm-hmm. Well, if the lady hasn't been to a dentist for 4 years and she's had a toothache all this time, she gets good care. I mean, we've got like 26 doctors, and I don't remember how many dentists, and about 4 or 5 optical people. And if they need more care, they can come back to Johnson County next week. I mean, you're right, it is, it's a form of triage, but he said, we don't pull good teeth. He said there's a complaint. People say, yeah, they just go in to pull teeth. And he said, no, we don't pull good teeth. So, I understand. But anyway, it's just
because, I mean, the one thing that I came away from D.C. with, Kate, and it continues to resonate with me, is the expansion of Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
And that desperately needs to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And the elimination, as I mentioned last night and repeatedly while I was there, the elimination of these godforsaken, detestable, draconian, hateful asset tests for Medicaid.
Yeah.
I mean, if that happens, that's going to do dramatic things for a lot of people in a lot of places that can't get help as it is.
Right. I'm you're talking to me. I am $4.98 over the poverty line. Under the poverty line. So for me to make any money or to work, I know you can work on Social Security, blah blah. I know all that. But I would lose my medical care if I were to earn any money. So if people want to hire me, I say, no, I don't need your money. I don't want any, you know, I mean, yeah.
Happy to do the work, just it, right. And it puts families in a terrible bind. People who would otherwise, you know, even if the economy was well enough to support it, people who would like to go out and get back to work can't because they lose things that are critical to them, like Medicaid if they happen to have it, because if they own anything, they're screwed, or if they make a nickel, they're screwed.
And I just have to run legal. I can't go around doing, you know, all I need is just pop up with a red flag and a computer, and, you know, I just can't bother with who did I lie to, or how did I get away with this, or can I get away with that, or what, you know, I just have to just flat, that's it, no negotiation. Anyway, you didn't get to it last night, or you didn't, it was confusing. I heard a story on CBC coming over on Sirius that Nashville nearly had a culture war, Toronto Theater Company.
Yeah, I did some looking for it on the fly. I got your email, and I couldn't find the story, and I didn't want to just go off ex cathedra, as it were.
Yeah, I didn't give you enough information, or at least a link.
But there was an uproar over Shakespeare in Nash Vegas?
Yep. Is it Mercutio? Is he the...
Mercutio. Yeah, in Romeo and Juliet.
Right. Some of his lines are a little bit racy.
Well, being how it's Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm. And they were invited to come to Nashville. And
they being a Canadian Shakespeare company.
Mm-hmm. Who put this play on. I think the director said they performed it for over 100,000 people up there, including mostly students up there over the years. And when they got to Nashville, some of the parents went to dress rehearsal. They had a hissy fit. Well, I mean, some of the lines are a bit, you know, they're kind of racy, but that was Shakespeare. That's the way it was written. And they tried to get the company to change the script.
Oh, I bet I know what they hated. These fundamentalist wingnut horses' rear ends.
Oh, yeah. It was all there. They were sexual innuendos and
just... If love be rough with you, be rough with love. Prick love for pricking, and you beat love down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And something about being on your back and all that, you know. I mean, it's freaking Shakespeare. But anyway, some of those parents just had a hissy fit, and the director said no, he just didn't want to have a culture war, but he didn't want to change Shakespeare's words. And so they put it on anyway, and some of the kids that were interviewed said, oh, I love that. It was why I didn't know. I said, Shakespeare's always been boring. That wasn't boring. And one woman said, she just sat there very uncomfortably with her little son. And, it, you know, I was like, oh, God, whatever. But for Christ's sake, that's Nashville. I laughed. It was funny. Anyhow, and I'm having a bit of a sociology. Well, it's the diphthongs over here in the Smokies. I can't get my head around or my mind around how to make two syllables out of a vowel. And I listen to people, you know, it can tell that their hill accent or if they're from somewhere else. I mean, you can tell a Texan talking over here, you know, I mean, can't tell them much, but, you know, the accents are different. But I'm listening for the diphthongs and the A's and the E's and how an A might get swallowed in a word that I just can't even say it. I can't mimic it, you know. I mean, I can't. It doesn't come out of my mouth. It's kind of probably like an acquired, a friend of mine said I was talking about how to roll my R's in Spanish, and she said, sister, you have to be born with that in your mouth. And so I figure that that's the way that the accent is over here in the Smokies, and it's wonderful. I'm a little bit west, northwest of Pigeon Forge and a little bit south of the Old Dominion, and I just, you know what it sounds like over
there. Smack dab in the middle of the Scots-Irish.
Yeah, I know.
And if you listen careful, you can hear a little bit of it to this day.
I know. That's what I'm listening for, and it's beautiful. And I'm, another thing I'm learning too is that I didn't know there were so many shades of orange. Everything, you know, people are all wearing orange, and it's unfortunate because I usually can camouflage myself in a place, but I can't wear orange for nothing. I think, well, maybe there's a more subtle shade of orange, but everywhere, I mean, there's orange, there's bright orange, there's soft pastel, there's in-your-face orange, and everywhere.
Yeah, everything from Gone Deer Hunting Blaze Orange all the way down to that sort of muted, almost almost yellowy orange.
Yeah, tangerine-y kind of stuff. And it's, yeah, but anyway, it's unfortunate I can't wear camouflage sports team clothing over here because I just can't get away with wearing orange. I have my red Cardinals.
It reflects up onto your face, and you wind up looking like Ohio Congressman John Boehner.
I reckon I would. I don't know. I've never tried it, but I know I can't get away with it.
You know, because all that tanning bed work he does has him about pumpkin orange.
Yeah, right. Anyway, it got a bit, the storm that you were in, it hit down here, too, and it was pretty,
It was worse where you were.
Well, really?
Oh, yeah. Y'all got big nasty. It was just where I was, people, you know, D.C. and Maryland and southern Pennsylvania and stuff just got caught with their pants down, so to speak.
Well, we only got...
Wouldn't want to do anything to make the parents in Nashville upset. But yeah, right.
No, they're not listening anyway. We only got over here, like right in Knox County, there was only like less than 3 or 4 inches in some places, but it was the cold and the wind chill, and then it melted, and you get the refreeze and stuff, and... I was parked pretty, I just parked. I didn't even go anywhere. And, but it got just a bit airy. I like to freeze myself to death. I thought I just better get room.
I'm gonna get me a room.
Yeah, I did. So I'm waiting for the clinic and then I'm gonna set up on, Friday at noon, and the clinic starts at 6 o'clock on Saturday morning, and goes, and then
You'll be busy.
I'll be busy.
And an email rolled in from our pal Marty. He says, FYI for Kate, actually just this past month, Landshark Stadium has been renamed. It is now Sun Life Stadium. And Marty says, you know, I think I like Landshark Stadium better.
Sun Life. Oh, my God. Isn't that an insurance company?
Yeah.
Holy shit. See, fascism taking off.
And you know what? Come to think of it, I don't know. Maybe it does come via Jimmy Buffett's song Fins, but the first time the phrase land shark was ever uttered was on Saturday Night Live.
Oh.
In the parody of Jaws, in which a land shark out of the New York sewers was preying upon women of the city, and you hear the, and either Jane Curtin or Lorraine Newman or whoever, who is it? Candy Graham. What? Jehovah's Witness. What? And then the land she'd open the door, and the land shark would eat her. Yeah.
Oh, dear.
But that's where, yeah.
I'm so culturally illiterate, I've never even seen Jaws because I don't know why. I was never interested in it, but I can see how that would be funny.
Yeah, but I'm working here, Kate. I'm working.
It had to be in there. Well, I told you, I just wanted this to be brief. I just wanted to get my... my gossip from the Gulf Coast. Oh, there's still no grocery store in Waveland. They just have a Walmart, a superstore, and that's it.
Well, that is a grocery store, Walmart Supercenter. What else could you possibly need?
And the food center across the street, across the intersection, that's still sitting there, looking just like it did after the hurricane, after the water went down, is still sitting there, and they're having big fights over it, and the people who own it, I don't know what all that's about, but they can't come in. Nobody's going to buy that property because it's been contaminated by a gas station or a fuel, you know, it's been contaminated with fuel and toxins and poisons and some air conditioners and stuff, and so nobody's going to buy the building and tear it down, and nobody's going to buy the property because they couldn't afford to bring it. So that big old ugly store is just still sitting there as a monument to what happens with local politics. And the mayor, Tommy Longo, got busted last week, the week before, for embezzlement. He was using the county fuel cards in his own car.
Oh, you know, just another day.
Just got it mixed up with my own credit card. It was just $1,100. It was, you know, no big deal. But he got popped for something like $29,000 or $21,000 in 2000 for using a rental car doing community mental health work while he was mayor, and so he had to pay all that back. And so the boy just can't get it right, you know. But his term is almost up. So poor Tommy. Poor Wave One. It's and Bryce is still on the air with WQRZ 103.5 LP FM.
Hanging on for dear life.
Yeah, he's not doing too well. Still hasn't heard from the FCC about his license and getting the power bumped up, and he still hasn't gotten a Mima cottage because they say he's running a business out of his home or something. I don't know. It's convoluted and it's pretty awful. But they did, the volunteers did get a room, a building built on the deck where his power is, the stacks and all that, you know, the little shed, the power shed where all the gear's at. They built a room there, so he's got a warm and dry domicile, but he doesn't have a Mima cottage, and I don't think he's even got a shower. But anyway, the people who have came back. I called from Galveston, didn't I? I called about Galveston and Bolivar Peninsula.
Yeah.
And it's the same way it is. It's the same on the Gulf Coast. The haves came back, and you drive through, and you just like nothing is really wrong. And people are saying, well, they came back. Well, and they've got houses. I mean, they're doing, look at 77% of the people are back. But they're not aware of what's going on the underbelly, the underside, the marginal people, the homeless. It's even more pitiful than it was right after the storm. Well, not right after, but all these long, long 53 months, it's just gotten, these people are just farther, the cracks got deeper, and there's just doesn't seem to be any way out of them, you know. You just cover the cracks over with asphalt and forget about it and change the stats. So anyway, that's my, that's it for tonight.
That's a lot.
Yeah. I thought there was, I feel like Luke, there was one more thing. What was it? I can't remember what it was. Oh, you were talking about no local radio stations. Well, coming over from Alabama into Chattanooga, I was punching around on the dial, and I caught the swap meet.
Don't you love it?
I do. I live for them. I mean, if you can.
We'll sell or swap for a hide of bed and $35. Call 140 ring 2 and ask for Bob.
Before noon. There's so much to be learned from those swap meet, those calls, and from the host and the callers and the things that are being sold and swapped and the jokes and the seriousness, and then some people are just pitiful. They're just in tears. You know?
Where do you think, you know, I've often wondered, where do you think eBay came from?
Well, I reckon it came from places like that.
Yeah. The irresistible urge of people to swap their crap for other people's crap.
Yeah, and the ones up in northern Alabama are even, I mean, the accents, the people calling, I mean, they're not affected, they're just like real folks, you know, like real folks in the little grocery store.
Well, see, when you get into North Alabama, you're honest to God in Appalachia.
Yeah, yeah.
And as you can probably tell, there is a profound difference in accent between North Alabama and South Alabama.
Oh, hell. Oh, yeah. Lord have mercy. I used to listen to that North Alabama swamp me every single morning. I'd wake up to that. It was wonderful. And I found the one here, and they're just, they're delightful. And it's a good way to learn the language, you know. And so anyway, I'm out of here. I'm just heading off to to bed.
Well, if you do get back down that way, I highly recommend DeSoto Falls.
Okay.
In Alabama.
You know, I got
it's a beautiful, beautiful place, but it's a tough place. Yeah, not so much in the dead and frozen of winter.
Well, that's the only time I do weird stuff. I beat that road back and forth now. I even know which, over the hill, that's going to be Flying J. You know, I mean, I'm getting so used to it, I'm getting more familiar with it than I am the east-west I-40. Oh, by the way, I-40 going through Knoxville is done. Oh, Lord, it's nice. Ooh, honey, lots of parkways and 40 just bombs on through and, ooh, oh, it was closed, and they closed the city for a long time, but it's done now, except the rock slide over at Asheville is still closed, and it's a 58-mile detour around the rock slide. So I heard that from Jeremy, the meat cutter at the Food City in Knoxville. So you learn when you sit down with a cup of coffee and Burger King with a computer and start talking, the student across the way eating his, on his lunch hour is going to come over and talk. So had a delightful conversation. So anyway, I'm out of here, and I'll check in from on down the road. And it's good to talk to you. And how's the mom and all them?
Oh, mom and them's good. Just muddling along. Agnes has been being middle school mommy for the last during the school year, and it's worn her about to a plum frazzle.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there's a little bit of a let-up coming because, you know, mercifully we have middle school football and middle school basketball, but no middle school baseball, so that means maybe she's pretty near done being middle school mom. But she's got one more year left of it because Doodle will be an eighth grader next year.
Right.
And then she's, we're going to have to be, the high school parents. And Margie's already a sophomore, and it's all running past.
Yeah, very fast. So, anyway, when you mentioned tonight with the hard news that it was going to be one of those nights, and the Mars influence is wreaking havoc, chaos with the universe, and so whatever's going on, I've got friends dying, friends getting laid off, friends sick. It's pitiful, and that's just in my own little small circle of friends, and so it's bigger all over the planet. And
hang on and take the ride.
Yeah, hang on. Keep it between the ditches. Take care.
Well, that's like somebody said to me the other day when we were talking about me wanting a four-wheel drive for the last D.C. trip and winding up with the Chevy HHR. go-kart, Jesus. But, Bob, you didn't need a four-wheel drive. I said, four-wheel drive just allows you to get stuck somewhere that you ordinarily couldn't with two-wheel drive.
That's right. False sense of security.
Well, like I said, at all those wrecked vehicles with the 45-degree, tent angles in the hoods.
Oh, yeah.
Every last one of them was four-wheel drive.
Oh, yeah. Somebody told me, he said, you be careful out there when, you don't, if it's going to snow again, and so. Lord, his accent was from Florida, East Tennessee, and Germany. He was raised in Germany for 14 years. That was his first language, his crib language. And the combination of all three of them sound like he's from New Orleans.
Well, that's about what you wind up with, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So,
and I've got a piece of writing to share later in the evening. It is by Mark Lorando, who is a writer with the Times-Picayune.
Mm-hmm.
It's titled An Open Letter to the City Hosting Super Bowl 44.
Mm-hmm.
I have a feeling you will get a kick out of it.
Mm-hmm. Who dat? Oh.
Who dat?
NFL. I don't know about that controversy. It's like, who owns who dat? I mean, oh, my God.
Well, I'd just be happy if we can hurry up and discredit Tim Tebow's mama before they run that stupid commercial.
Yeah,
I'm really mad about it, I know it's probably misplaced anger, displaced anger. I probably need 3 or 4 years of serious therapy to explain my anger. But the fact of the matter is, it's the Super Bowl. It's a secular holiday in this country, and we don't need it getting all Jesused up with little Timmy Tebow.
No.
But that's me. And
Typical Sunday, is that next week, this week coming
that's
up?
That's Sunday, yes.
3 or 4 days or something?
Yeah, yeah.
This is Tuesday, that's Sunday?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm going to be at the health clinic at noon doing...
That's okay. They won't kick off till 6 or 7 or 8 o'clock.
Oh.
Probably it's probably a 6 o'clock kickoff. You may, yeah.
It don't matter. Let's save all this sports talk for Luke or whoever else calls in. You guys do your sports talk. I don't want to use your material all up.
Oh, I'll be here all week.
Try the veal.
There you go. Talk to you later, Kate.
Bye.
She's a living cultural anthropologist, Kate is, as she goes round and about and uphill and down dale. Let's see. You know, I could stop and take a break, but I don't want to stop and take a break. But I hate letting something like what did I have Saxby Chan? Oh, we're going to have a bunch of tattooed love boys, and I realized where that phrase came from. It's a Pretenders tune.
And there's 20 doors around her house, back and into the love boys. I told my knees, look at them too, you kiss I needed to find out what the thing was for, then read it. A man's time came to explore. I went ain't far, cause I thought that I liked it. Little cheek, but I didn't need it. But you mess with a good song, you gotta pay. A good time was guaranteed for one and all. The tattoos, target practice in the hall while waiting for their number to get called out. I found out what the wait was about. I was a good time, yeah. I got pretty good. Changing tires upstairs, bro. I shot my mouth off, and you show me what that holds. Oh, now.
I think I still got a crush on Chrissy Hynde. Oh, something. Oh, yeah, and that's little things just embed themselves in your brain. You're listening to Saxby Chambliss, the draft dodger who had 5 deferments from Vietnam and had a bum knee, and he's talking about how we're gonna have we got problems with tattoos in the military, and that phrase just spills out of your mouth. That tattooed love boys, you know, where the hell did that come from? And it's because I've had a crush on Chrissy Hynde since 1979 or so. It all makes sense after a while, doesn't it? Welcome to the second hour of the program. Let's keep it rolling on. Got a couple of lines open if you want to jump in. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. or on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And, yeah, let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, is that me?
That would be you, Reverbo. What's up?
You know, it's another problem with your homosexual. He cannot control his impulses like the red-headed heterosexual soldier can.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it is, because you know how considerate those guys are. Like, for example, the ones...
Well, how are you going to do any good raping and pillaging if you got a bunch of gay soldiers?
Well, yeah.
I mean, where are the lamentations of the women's going to come from?
I don't know if you've read over the last, I don't know, 5 or 10 years, maybe even longer, just the horrible complaints by women who serve in the military about the crappy attitude and treatment they get by the men.
Yeah, I kind of have.
And it's really, really...
It goes all the way back to the tail hook scandal, remember that?
Oh, yeah, well, maybe, sure. But, I mean, this all starts out in basic. I mean, the whole idea is to turn, you know, a civilized person into a raping and killing and death machine, an abusive machine. And, you know...
And then bring them home and say, okay, don't kill them, no more of that. You be nice now.
Yeah. So we're to believe, I guess, Senator Chambliss, is he the senator?
Yes. Saxby Chambliss, Saxby.
Right.
Where do these names come from?
Down a plantation. They keep naming them that, I suppose.
Yeah.
But Jerry Omo can't control their impulses, you see. Oh, yeah, right. Like all the rest of the soldiers are well behaved. But, what's her name? Was her name Jamie? What's her name? The one that they were considering not to lock her up in a box so she could heal from that gang rape? What was her name?
But them wasn't soldiers. Them was just employees of the Blackwater. Or Halliburton or whatever.
I don't know. That's a fine line for me.
True enough.
Yes. I consider enough. I, wanted to, mention this thing the other day, and I don't. Didn't call you up to talk about another show or to talk about Hartman, but you got him. This is a great story. So Hartman, the other day, he has Steve Forbes on the show. And, of course, and he just lays into him about, you know, with everything, all the evidence just points to the middle class just, you know, deteriorating and our standard of living going down, wages tanking since the 80s, and the whole thing that everybody, you just have to be a complete, well, you have to be a billionaire not to know this, that's been going on. And actually, they do know that's been going on because that's what they want to be going on. And so he's, you know, doing this whole preamble to try to get Forbes to, you know, say, well, so what's the deal? You still think that, you know, the free market is the way to go here? You think we need some regulation? I swear to God, Forbes just dives right in with this whole, you know, that's just hogwash. We're just more socially and economically mobile, and that'll be four. We're just, our standard of living is just going up, and he's going on about just unrestricted markets are just self-regulating, and they just encourage competition. And Bob, you know, they keep those prices down. And you can just see Hartman just, like, stunned at this. And Forbes' example for how great it is, how great this is, he says, just look at all the incredible array of goods and services in front of the consumer today. How much more shit you can buy than you could, you know, 30 years ago. Now, that isn't proof that things are better, I don't know what is. I'm not kidding you.
Is this where I cue up this future so bright I have to wear shades?
This is what he said. Just look, pull the curtain, friend. Just gaze upon all these goods and services, all the ways to spend our money. And, of course, he never once worried about, you know, how we're going to get the money to buy all this stuff. You know, or how we all went into debt, we're drowning in debt as a substitute for wages. He never really didn't even touch on that.
No, because those you know, the free market will work those details out.
Self-regulating, of course. I just don't know what to say. It's like, yeah, when's the last time
Well, what isn't it Kate who says something along the lines of chaotic systems are self-correcting? And is what Steve Forbes saying basically that free markets are basically economic chaos theory in action, and that they'll always settle themselves? And you know, maybe they do, Reverbo. Maybe they do. But that doesn't include the human detritus, the flotsam and jetsam of DNA and bits of flesh and bone that are left in their corrective wakes, does it?
No, it doesn't. And also, that I think there was a much greater ability for the markets to correct themselves, yes, without dropping H-bombs on everyone, you know, 50 years ago. I think now, in the midst of, like, you know, the casinos on Wall Street, it's a joke. I mean, you're just basically chasing. It's just organized. It's usually just syndicates running around. I don't know how you're going to. Their whole job is to keep one step ahead of that of the correction officer, so to speak. But yeah, he's going on. Here's a guy. These people, really believe that, hey, we're going to pass that savings on to you. And I'm thinking, when did you ever pass the savings on to me, Chief? Never.
Remember the peace dividend we were going to get?
I got one.
Did you?
No.
I didn't think so, because they lost my address, too.
I thought I got one, but it was.
Yeah, it didn't hold. You know, I mean, I remember when that phrase was thrown around seriously, and it's the same thing. Well, you know, if we tax employer plans and plans become more expensive, and well, the employers will just go to a lesser plan and they'll pass the savings back to the employees. When in the name of economics has that ever happened?
Never.
That would be never. And what is it that makes people so silly as to think it will ever happen?
This goes back to your point, your illuminating point about perpetuating ignorance. Because I guess we keep hoping, we keep thinking it happened, even though it didn't. I mean, this works, this may work at Wild Bob's You Painted Furniture Warehouse. Maybe he passes the savings on to
you. We pass the savings on to you. We eliminate the middleman. But 9 times out of 10, when you hear that, isn't the guy who's telling you they eliminate the middleman, isn't he the middleman in the first place?
Well, he is. And I don't believe Wild Bob is passing the savings on to us. I think there's another Corvette in Wild Bob's garage is what. That's exactly what happened.
Hey, we've all seen the house of the guy who runs Unpainted Arizona. Remember the movie?
Nathan Arizona.
Nathan Arizona. There you go.
Get myself.
Yes, you do.
Oh, I do. Oh, God, what a great movie. And The Pretenders. What an outrageously great band they were in the beginning.
Oh, and I got a line here from... a note here from Scott up in Massachusetts. He says, second favorite lyric, I shot my mouth off and you showed me what that hole was for. Second best after, you say there's a race of men in the trees, you're for tough legislation, thanks for calling, I wait all night for calls like these. And I guess I touched a nerve, Reverbo, because I got one from Marty here. You only think you still have a crush on Chrissy. I still do.
Huh. Yeah, she was something. God, the story of that band is just the saddest one.
Oh, it's just, it's like there's a curse.
Two of their original members died from drug overdoses, I remember.
Yeah, rock and roll occupational hazards, in other words.
Mm-hmm. Yes, burned. What is that thing? Burn more brightly? Burn?
Yes.
I'm still with sassy channels. I can't.
Think. Well, no. I got us a little language lesson, Reverbo. Going back to old Saxby. Lottie informs me that Saxby is in Norwegian means from the farm of the short sword. And he says the name Saxby originated as a Norwegian name. The name Saxby is most often used as a boy name or a male name. And the fact of the matter is, well, you know, short sword.
Yeah.
Short
well,
sword.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a family name. All the men in the Chambliss family must have well, you know, they must, their swords were short.
Yes. And not broad.
I wonder if he should be reminded of this fact.
Wouldn't you love to? Hey, short sword!
God, how come he hasn't changed his name?
You know, why hasn't he gone the Joe Wilson route?
There you go.
The Mitch McConnell route. You know, Mitch McConnell's name's not Mitch McConnell either.
What is his
name? Addison? Something like that?
Oh, that's good.
I think both Dennis and Corey are both in Kentucky and have commented on Chinless Mitch from time to time. Who took that, you know, who stole that man's chin?
Don't know.
And
he's not a good looking man.
No, he's not. or to get kind of Python-esque, not attractive to women.
No. I mean, can you believe this guy's more on Forbes? Worth like $50 billion or whatever.
Yeah, he ain't got no chin either.
But he's actually telling us again that just look at all the desserts on the dessert tray. Are you telling me your life isn't better, Riverboat? And I'm going, God, they all look good, but how am I going to pay for these, Steve? Well, you just let the unrestricted free market take care of that. Okay, whatever. I got it. These people are insane. Somehow or other, it's not. If you've never had to go shopping, I guess, or ever had to gas up your car,
Riverbo, did you ever read Pogo? You know, Walt Kelly's brilliant, seminal cartoon strip of the 50s and 60s?
I did.
Do you remember the bats?
The bats?
Every now and then, these conniving, finagling little bats would make their way into the strip. And I remember one just so vividly because it's kind of got, it sort of somehow or another connects with this free market conversation. There's a scene in which the bats are playing poker. And there's not an honest one in the lot. And one of them looks up and says, I can't tell if I've got the ace of spades or a piece of jelly bread here. And the other bat, being, of course, concerned that it might actually be the ace of spades, says to him, well, you is free to eat that and draw another one. It's a free, you know, you're free to eat that. Only, yeah. You know, but it might be to your detriment. It might not work out so well. Because, you know, you might draw the seven of diamonds or something. I don't know, maybe that didn't work, but for some reason or another, when you were talking about the dessert cart and Steve Forbes saying, Riverbo, look at all this. Doesn't it just make your life better just looking at those desserts? You is free to eat it and draw a new one.
Yes, Steve, I'm a little short today. Can you help me out? I'd like to,
That'd be welfare. We can't, no, that would be an improper manipulation of the market.
Right. The fact that two people have to work today to make the same amount of money as like one person could make in 1980. I mean, where the hell has Steve Forbes been? Didn't this guy run for president?
Why, yes, he did.
He attempted to. What party was he aligned with?
That would be the Re-Pig-Licking Party.
Really? It didn't work out for Steve. Well, it'd probably be a huge cut in pay for him.
Well, didn't he promise at one point that he wouldn't take his presidential salary? Wasn't that him?
No, that's bigger than. To get back to our military here, you were talking about what they love to do is throw out these horrific conclusions, and then of course try to find a reason for it. What do they call it? That's the inversion of premises and conclusions that the Pickmans always do. So it's like, well, you don't want to draft, do you? What do you mean, Senator? Well, no, I don't want to draft. Well, that's what you'll get if you have homosexuals in the Army.
Because we won't be able to keep the straight ones. And then your little precious lumpkin's going to get drafted into a gay military, and he's going to come out just a flaming homo after his hitch is up.
He's just completely ignoring the fact that, you know, one guy quit the Canadian Army in disgust, and the rest of them just went back to work.
Yeah, you know, I've just got this vision of Paris Island, South Carolina, with a bunch of gay Marines doing that. You know how they chant while they run and stuff? Doing that with Liza Minnelli with show tunes. One singular sensation! Right, you know?
That's a scene I'd love to see. I don't know. I always wonder if there would be any way to get create soldiers that weren't so twisted with this whole sex and death and abuse thing. It just seems like they've gone about this the wrong way. Boy, it creates some real problems. They do chant while they're doing exercise, and they do sing little songs, and these songs have to do with doing nasty things to their girlfriends and their moms and stuff. I mean, they're really...
I don't know, but I've been told.
Da-da-da-da-da. No, it's not good. Well, here's something that is good, and it's the... It's you and Guy last week. I got to touch on this.
Go ahead. Oh, do please.
I made some notes here, and the thing I was wondering was, where are they? Yeah, does Guy realize that he's being funny?
I don't think. No.
Feeding you lines. He's feeding you.
Guy James is the ultimate straight man. He makes Bud Abbott look like a cut-up.
But I kind of got it differently. I think in that comedy team, you are the straight man. Because I can just see you, or I imagine seeing you, just shaking your head at the stuff that he says. I mean, I don't mean when you guys are working. I mean, during the, you know, when nothing's going on, and the conversation turns to egg salad, for example. Which was a great, great, that he... Food is a big topic with Guy, is that true?
Oh, yes, yes.
But, I mean, I was howling at the whole egg salad story.
Oh, the potato salad?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, the potato salad. Yeah, I'm sorry, yeah.
You know, Reverbo, you have no idea what torment it was, because, I'm not kidding, we, you know, everybody at these conferences, you know, you get to kick back, you relax, you have a little fun. We work our butts off. And I mean, this isn't me crawling up on the cross while everybody's out on the veranda having a cocktail and a cigarette. But now it's work for us. And generally it happens in such a way that, you know, we get up and we want to make sure everything works and we get moving. And so, you know, I wind up with the broadcast breakfast of champions, you know, three Starbucks decafs, the decafs with skim milk and a half a pack of Camels. And long about the time I go on air, I'm getting right hungry. And so, lo and behold, bless his heart, guy goes out and gets the nice lunch, and it's a nice cold cut sandwich and some potato red skin potato salad and the bag of chips and a pickle and all of that stuff. And I'm sitting there going through my 3 hours and just drooling all over the microphone because I'm starving. And every now and then, guy will look up and go, "Oh, Bob, this is real good." Thanks, Guy.
I'm telling you, I just wondered if he realizes, does he act like that? Does he say those things to get a rise out of you, or does it just come naturally to him?
No, it is as natural as rain falling down from the sky.
Because
it's a beautiful thing.
It wouldn't work the other way. If you would, I hope your listeners are enjoying this part of our conversation here. I don't know how many of them caught the Bob and Ray show. Or I'm sorry, the Bob and Guy show last week. But I tried to, and this is, of course, unsolicited criticism from me. But trust me, I enjoyed the whole thing. And I just wonder if, because he's got this sort of observational style, comedy style, and you're much more analytical. And so, It just seems like you, he's saying these half-time things, ridiculous things, and it's just, you're reacting to him, you see. You're way more serious than he is, and he's got this folksier thing going on, right? And he's got this sort of the grandfatherly voice, right, that resonant voice that just adds to the, I mean, do you remember the comment he made? He made about Orrin Hatch? He just popped out with this?
Oh, God, what was it about Orrin Hatch?
Well, basically, he just called him an a-hole.
Yeah, well, yes, he did. Yeah, what was it? But I hate him? Something like that? Yeah.
He just fires out with this, and I just, and then you reacted to this in some way. But, like, on your own show, it's a whole different deal, because this is you know, working without a net, but, I don't know, he just had me laughing, that's all I can say. And he returns to these extraneous topics later on, you know. And, again, the potato salad thing just kept coming up, and how long that might have been unrefrigerated. And then you come out with things like the sword of Damocles, and at that point, I am glad I'm sitting down, or I have to go somewhere.
Yeah, and you know, ELO jumps in. Not true. I thought you and Guy worked some serious politics in between your joking.
I'm not talking about that. You guys are very good. You both do good interviews, and
you know, I in all seriousness, I am proud of the work we do at these things because, in many instances, I feel sorry. In a way, for the people who are there to get their information out, because they just go bang, 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 table, 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 and it's all in one room, but there's an element of, you know, hello Cleveland about it all, because it's like, who are you? Oh, I don't know. Who are you? Oh, well, damn glad to meet you, and to sit there and be able to get information on the fly and have something approaching a serious conversation. I think is a challenge on both host and guest, and I'm pretty pleased with the reaction that we get out of these things. And so far it's all been positive, so it seems like these things are worth the effort. And we'd love to let people see that there are real live, honest to God, serious radio people who are working only on the internet. That terrestrial radio is not some sort of a badge of professionalism, because yeah. nobody was working any harder there than Guy and I were.
Well, we're just, you know, I'm just listening over my computer speakers, and you guys are there, and this is a totally other, you know, the intensity is maybe totally different. And to me, it just sounds like you guys are just having a good time. And I don't know how to put this. It was sort of like you kind of exude a sense of humility. And I kind of like that. I just think that adds to your credibility. If you're you don't come off like some of these people who are, you know, just give you 2 minutes and then they hang up on you. The heck, you knew that, didn't you?
Well, it's what we're working at, without a doubt.
The guy just made me laugh, and I always wondered if it's intentional. Some of this crazy stuff he says are unintentional.
Well, and him, when we finally got, you know, we were a little bit late getting to air on Thursday, about 35 minutes late, because we were having just, and you never have one technical problem, Reverbo. You have, a raft of them. You have a horde of them, a plague of them. One thing doesn't work, you get it working, and the next thing doesn't work, and by the time you get the second thing working, the first one's crapped out on you. That's the way Thursday at noon was. And when we did go to air, a guy was terribly pleased to tell the listening audience, you know, Bob's pretty good at being unflappable, but I think I saw him get very near to losing his temper.
Ooh.
And I did.
But you weren't on at the top of the hour that day, as I recall.
Right. And you know, I don't even like it when I'm 3 seconds late starting the show here. But there I was, 35 minutes in, and yeah, the little beads of sweat were beginning to gather around my hairline. But we got it, you know, we got it on, we got going, and I was pleased with it. And then we didn't have another glitch until the last 20 minutes of the. So you know, we lost the first 30 minutes of the first day and the last 30 minutes of the last day, And it's like balancing an equation in algebra or something. It just happens. But somebody had someone had tripped over my internet cord and semi-disconnected me from the router, and therefore, you know, the program went.
That'll do it. Hey, I have a technical question real quick.
Yes.
I know tiny bit about this. I screw around with radio a teeny tiny bit. I was wondering how come you can't hear what's going on. I can sort of hear this, the room a little bit, but I can hear like this sort of incident noise, crowds, people in a room milling around, sort of vague noises. But I don't hear anybody next to you. And so, do you guys bring the dynamic mics?
Oh yeah, they're dynamic mics, and the main one we use, and we need more of them, is a supercardioid. And what that means is that it's...
The condenser mic would be horrible there.
A what?
The condenser mic would just be horrible.
Well, it depends on the pickup pattern, but it also, what would be horrible would be an omnidirectional mic, because that would be nothing but the room. Or that would be you and everything else in the room. And the other thing is, bless his heart, John Fox has been a brilliant teacher, and he's taught me to mess with the EQ and the gains and the trim and the filtering and everything, the point that, you know, we can eliminate a lot of that. I would love to have the wherewithal to have a compressor to take with us, because that would make it even less roomy. It would sound like we were in a studio.
Oh. I don't mind it. I like the sound of the remote. I like to get the idea of where you are that comes across. Anyway, I will leave you with this. This is a... you ever read that? You know, author named Charles Pierce, he wrote a book called Idiot America. Great book.
I know Charles Pierce. I'm not familiar with that book in particular.
All right. Well, he goes. He talks about creationism. And it's just what you think it is. It's what is going on with people. What do they use for brains? What's happening here in this country? And so, to come full circle around back to our friend Saxby, well, we certainly don't want to. You know, let the facts and the evidence get in the way of a good horror story. Pierce talks in some of the chapters. He talks about this effort that this pastor guy, somebody in Pennsylvania, Pennsylvania, I think it was trying to get creationism, you know, in science class, in biology class. Just there, here we go again. And unfortunately for him, it was an uprising, and people were not going to put up with this. And he had a famous, as things were falling down around him and the group that wanted to pollute our science class, he just dribbled. His line was, well, we've been attacked by the intelligent, educated segment of our culture.
Wow.
Wow. What are we going to do, folks? We've been... The people
bozos to the barricade.
There you go. Our opponents seem to be way smarter than us, and we look like fools. What are we going to do? Can you imagine saying that with a straight face? Well...
But you see, it plays in a place like that, because I always go back to my colleague Rick Smith's observation that Pennsylvania consists of Philadelphia in the east, Pittsburgh in the west, and Alabama in the middle.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of truth in that. More truth than anyone. Because, wow. You know, I saw a little... Well, Rick and I had to run out for a cable while I was up there helping him with his studio on Sunday. And we... were in one of those ubiquitous shopping plazas, you know, with the Target and the Bed Bath and Beyond and yada, 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 yada. And we were making our slow way toward Best Buy, and it was slow because of all the Bubbas in pickup trucks that were jacked about 3 feet up off the ground who were stopping to talk to another Bubba in another pickup truck in the lane going the other direction and just stopping traffic. You know, while I sat there and talked and spit tobacco juice on the pavement, I went, well, damn, this is like home.
Right, it's home.
I mean, maybe this being north of Mason-Dixon line is overrated.
Well,
Because it doesn't seem like, you know, it just didn't seem that much different from the stuff I see on a daily basis or grew up with.
Well, you look at the big board here, and I think your redneck has migrated and proliferated in many countries. I've got pins in my world map here where the redneck is concentrated, and it's say we got them in Mongolia, Bob. We got them in New Guinea. Here's a whole bunch of...
And you know, sometimes there are, Reverbo, sometimes there are stealth rednecks. I know it's a little hard to get your head around, but it's the absolute truth. Sometimes there are stealth rednecks, and I've got an example of one right here and right now. It's a creepy bastard by the name of Daniel Pipes.
A stealth neck. I like this.
Yeah, yes, a stealth neck. Daniel Pipes is a right-wing thinker. He is identified as a neoconservative scholar activist. This is the guy that George Bush nominated to head the Middle East Peace Institute or some such back during his reign of stupidity. And who this guy has the, you know, he's got he's got a history of saying things like, you know, I just don't like being around Arabs because of all those weird food smells. Really?
Wow.
Really? Yeah, I know. It kind of stops you, doesn't it?
I mean, I wish I could have come up with that, but I didn't. Oh, man.
So he applies electrons to monitor or whatever, you know, pen to paper, you know, little sharp stick to bird poo, and puts out some ideas recently, writing on what he calls Obama's attempts to reset his presidency. And he says, Obama's attempts to reset his presidency will likely fail if he focuses on economics, where he is just one of many players. What?
What?
Right, but no, it's just, we're not there. We're not to the what part yet, Reverbo.
Oh.
And he says that Barack Obama needs a dramatic gesture to change the public. You could almost hear this being said in the room with the big board. You know, maybe by General Turgidson. He needs a dramatic gesture to change the public perception of him, preferably in an arena where the stakes are high, where he can take charge, and where he can trump expectations. Remember in Dr. Strangelove where General Turgidson starts talking about, can he get there on one engine? Can he get there? Why, if he flies, yes, he can! And he's all worked up in a full lather, and then he realizes it's entirely inappropriate for the moment. And he just kind of
my favorite scenes.
And he just kind of ducks his head and chews his gum a little harder. Right. Well, okay. So Daniel Pipes writes this. Then he follows up with this. You're going to love this. This is the what part. Such an opportunity does exist. Obama can give orders for the U.S. military to destroy the Iranian nuclear weapon capacity. Just as 9/11 caused voters to forget George W. Bush's meandering early months, a strike on Iranian facilities would dispatch Obama's feckless first year down the memory hole and transform the domestic political scene. You can almost hear the fife and drum corps in the background, can't you, Reverbo? It would sideline health care, prompt Republicans to work with Democrats, make Netroot squeal, independents reconsider, and conservatives swoon. Hell yes, he can fly that thing in there.
Damn.
Stealth neck.
A stealth neck. Well, and the scary part is when you said, oh, well, you haven't gotten to the oh, wow part yet. With these people, it's always the same. It's like those science fiction movies, those monster movies, where they spent the first hour and 55 minutes trying to just destroy this huge, huge, hideous sea monster that we... that came up out of the ocean that's just rampaging over Tokyo, rampaging through London, right? That we, you know, due to our, you know, carelessness with those nuclear bombs, you know, we had this thing grow to, like, gargantuan size, and we finally get control of it and then realize that's just the baby one.
Right. Yeah, that's just the mother's still down there.
Right, he's real pissed off now. You know? That's a good thing for Obama. He should just forget about the economy. I think it's
screw it all, bomb Iran. You know, what's a few dead Persian babies among warriors? But I love the response of General Anthony Zinni. because he comes at it from the standpoint of, I don't know, Billy Mays. And he says, after you've dropped those bombs on those hardened facility, what happens next? And this is General Zinni. Eventually, if you follow this all the way down, eventually I'm putting boots on the ground somewhere, and like I tell my friends, if you like Iraq and Afghanistan, you'll love Iran.
If these people actually just came straight out and just stop people on the street and just said, hey, I'm looking for your vote, you know, and you go, oh, really? Well, what do you got? What are you offering me? Well, here, I'll tell you how this works. If you elect me, we will promise to obliterate every social safety net that you count on now. We will promise to funnel all your money up straight to the top. We will expand the military-industrial complex even beyond, to a colossal level beyond you are my imagination, and we will constantly try to reduce or restrict your participation in the political and economic scene in this country. So, can I count on you?
Oh, I'm there.
They wouldn't get up. No one would vote for them. They can't do it that way. We have to have a draft, and the reason we have a draft is because of homosexuals.
It's their fault.
Here we go. It was important to get back to the beginning.
I want to make that video where people are doing the opening lines from a chorus line. I want to do that, Roberto.
It's going to be good. Well, and we should do that on one of the days where the Creation Museum is closed and we have a little time to kill.
Yep, because the green jackets would come in handy there, too.
Anyway.
Maybe but for the video, green jackets and Bermuda shorts. Maybe lederhosen, I'm not sure.
Sport jackets and shorts is not every guy can pull out look off.
But we can damn sure try.
Depends if we have those enamel horn buttons on the lapels. Now that's nice.
Yeah, well, that's a sine qua non. Reverbo, hey. This has been fun.
Yeah, to pass that savings on to me.
Yes, the check's in the mail.
You got it. Okay, take it easy.
Later, Reverbo. Bye now. That's Critic at Large Reverbo checking in with some just a brilliant idea. Hey, welcome to the program.
May the diggles here, Bob.
Oh, my God, Rick.
Oh, my goodness. What are you up to, young man? Talking there.
Just raising a ruckus.
I can hear that.
But I do love your idea. It has been a long time. I got your email. And I like the idea of letting the crazy drivers thin the herd before you get on the road with them. Unfortunately, I was not in a position to be able to do that. I was out there, and there were some people out there on the highway, Rick. Clueless.
It seems here that they go faster and crazier when there's snow on the ground and ice here because they want to show how well they can drive. So I give them the first day to kill themselves off, and then I get back on the road.
Yeah, and down where you are, you don't get so much snow as you get the freak ice storm, and those are the real party.
Yeah, then you get that black ice on the highways, and everybody seems to think, well, that's clear.
Look at
free to drive on that.
State Road's been doing a good job. Look here, they got it all shiny for us.
Yeah, it sure looks real pretty there. Not bad at all. Well, the reason why I called, first of all, I got to apologize to Mr. Obama. I was too mean to him. His little talk with the House Republicans just really inspired me. I'm sure y'all have talked about that already.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, but I was amazed. It's about time you started fighting them.
I loved it. I want to see the next step. You know, because that's the thing about baby steps. Baby takes first step. If baby doesn't take step number two, baby winds up on its little padded bottom.
And he doesn't walk.
And he doesn't go forward.
Well, I think I read today that he's going to go ahead and talk to the Democrats next. I mean, that's a good idea. Someone else slap around. Yeah, sure. God.
You know, he doesn't have to talk to all of them. He can tell, there's a handful. He can tell just stay home.
I think there's seven of them in the Senate that he could talk to. I'd love to see him talk to those seven. But
Yeah, people like, what's his name, Bai? Yeah, that'd be Landrieu, Ben Nelson.
Nelson, yeah.
Blanche Lincoln.
God. Well, speaking of her.
God, wouldn't she just make a freight train take a dirt road?
Landrieu, wasn't it, that got her little place, her phones messed with?
Well, yeah, but see, now the right wing's putting it out there that, you know, this is a tempest in a teapot. This wasn't a real federal crime. This was investigative journalism.
You expect them to do that. They did that after Watergate. This is just a second, you know.
I'm not a crook.
Yeah. This is just a second-rate burglary. No big deal. Don't nothing to look at here. You people just keep on moving. But the judge is taking it seriously. He's telling that guy, he's sending him home, sending him to his room, putting the boy in timeout. He's grounded. God. I can't believe they let that idiot out of jail.
Yeah, they did. He bonded out. And, you know, his other pals are total wing nuts, too. One of them was founded some conservative rag at his college, just like O'Keefe had done. The son of the sitting, acting U.S. attorney for the Western District of Louisiana works for the Pelican Institute.
Yeah, I heard about that.
Which, you know, sounds like, oh, the Pelican Institute? Really? They're protecting the Pelicans? I like Pelicans. No.
Well, in my line of work, when you say institute, you get a different vision.
Well, that's true. the walls are softer and the, right.
Yeah. And, you know, you got those muted colors and nobody gets excited. You know, it's calm stuff.
You mean they don't paint the day room bright blood red?
No, we try not to do that too often. It's one of those things we try to stay away from. Got to keep everything nice and calm. Here's the main reason why I called, though. If y'all get any time, and I know you have no time, WFAA, Below Debate. Let me repeat that. WFAA, Below, B-E-L-O, Debate.
This is a website?
It's WFAA.com. That's the website. It's actually a news outlet in Fort Worth.
Right, I thought.
WF. Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Or Fort, anyway. they had the debate with all three of the contestants for the GOP governor seat.
Oh, God, that had to be a hoot.
Hutchison, Perry, and Medina. So for the first time, a Republican Hispanic is running for governor. Now, she was very unique. Yeah, the reason I'm bringing this up is because the school here, the guy that's in charge of the history department, went ahead in one of the small towns close to here, I won't tell the name, and showed the debate to his class. Now, remember, these are kids of retarded kids. And
yep, right.
One of them are self-identified as being a Republican. There was two liberals in the class. That's where I got my information from.
Fifth columnists.
At the end of the debate, when he showed it, the Republicans were bouncing their head off the table, saying stuff like, they're morons, they're idiots, they're complete morons. What's going on here? This is a Republican debate. Now, I don't know how true it is. I'm going to check on it and find out. But I was told that teacher has been told not to ever do that again.
Don't ever show the Republicans to the little Republican children?
Right. Do not show a debate in a history class to show what politics is like. Yeah.
We're screwed.
Well, no, we're here in Texas. We're screwed. But nothing we can do about that.
Yeah, but the thing is that all that pernicious crap, with all due respect, Brother Rick, all that pernicious crap starts in Texas. And then the next thing you know, look at the history textbook that's going to include Phyllis Schlafly,
yeah,
but not Cesar Chavez.
Right.
And pretty soon that will be the textbook standard that's taught in, you know, Walla Walla, that's taught in Kennebunkport, that's taught in Detroit, that's taught in Montgomery, that's taught in every...
Yeah, well, we got a bit of sedition going on here. We have snuck something past the Republicans in control, and we did it by saying, oh, look at all the money you'll save. we pretty well hooked it up now. We're starting to get into most of the schools little gadgets like Kindles. So all the books and everything is no longer published. So there won't be people actually trying to push things into what the books are anymore. So I think we're going to do a little bit better on that. You don't quite get what I mean. What a Kindle is, don't you?
No, I do. And of course, I guess the new iPad is going to be the death of the Kindle.
No, probably will, but I hope not, because I got one for my birthday. God, they're good.
No, you like it?
Oh, you're going to get one. You are going to get one. It's a complete different world. It is beautiful. You can be sitting there reading, and the buzzer goes off. You got to go take the clothes out of laundry. Push a little button, and it reads to you while you take the clothes out.
Oh, that's okay. That's pretty cool.
And then you go back and finish reading. It's really wonderful.
Because, you know, my gripe with reading online has always been that I either have to be sitting here staring at the monitor or try to read it on a laptop, and it's just too big and bulky. Because I like to read in bed.
This is the size of a book, and it is absolutely wonderful. But anyway, we're getting it through the school systems. So now we're getting away from that gigantic text thing that we had before, because they're not going to show pictures. And where they made their big money before was they filled up the history books, the science books, and everything. It's just gigantic pictures that some of them didn't even relate to what they were talking about. So we're not going to have the people picking the books as much. So Texas should not be picking books for West Virginia anymore, hopefully.
Maybe that explains why our labor history is sort of, because who cares in Texas? But it would be nice if that playing field was equalized a little bit. By the way, coming out of the chat room at you, Rick, several happy birthday wishes.
Hey guys, love y'all. That's sweet. Actually, it's Texas and California who picks all the textbooks for the nation. All the publishers, because it's so expensive to publish a book, not the Kindle way, but a regular book, that they go for just two places, maybe three at the most. And those are the textbooks for everybody. That's the reason why the right wing works so hard to get on the textbook committees in Texas and California. That's the reason why we've got, I think, three right wing idiots. One of them's a preacher, and none of the three on the textbook committee has any background whatsoever in academics. They're all just right wing idiots.
Well, you know, you don't want it's like that quote that Reverbo read. The intelligent people are at war with us.
God, I love it.
By the way, a totally separate topic, Rick. But as someone who works in the mental health industry, did you see this story about the Navy getting busted?
That doesn't ring a bell.
Well, it's from yesterday over at I found it over at Crooks and Liars, which is one of my daily go-to sites. Susie Madrake, whose last name I always mess up. One of these days she'll just send me a pronouncer. But she has a post: Navy officials smear shrink's performance after he blows whistle on poor PTSD treatment.
Oh, well, I believe that.
No, this is real sleazy. She writes, quoting, internal documents and emails show that Navy officials unfavorably doctored a psychiatrist's performance record after he blew the whistle on what he said was dangerously inept management of care for Marines suffering combat stress at Camp Lejeune, North Carolina. The internal correspondence, and this is amazing, the internal correspondence obtained by Salon also includes an order to delete earlier records praising the work of the psychiatrist, Dr. Kernan Mannion, who was fired last September after lodging his complaints.
Oh, I believe that completely. I really do.
And this thing is apparently creating a rather nasty stink. So what we've got coming out of this, and the thing is, this is filtered down stuff, Rick, into, you know, your world, and that of thousands upon thousands of healthcare workers around the country.
What we end up with is they will do this. They will say that there's no problem with the soldiers. They get them out. That nothing's identified. They have no disability. nothing's being treated after they're out of service, and then you're right, they're dumped on us. And then they go to live.
And then they in turn can't, and they can't get appropriate service because they don't have appropriate coverage, because the reason this is going down is in order to forestall future claims, future VA claims, right?
Right, exactly. That's exactly why. And it's not just the Navy that's doing this. It's all the branches. They have fought long and hard to keep post-traumatic stress as being identified as an illness. And they're going to continue to.
Well, there's a poll quote here that's going to just send you around the bend, Rick. And it references a guy named O'Byrne. O'Byrne, head of mental health at the Camp Lejeune Naval Hospital, wrote of immediate concerns of physical safety due to mistreated Marines teetering on the edge of violence. Quote, there was and continues to be no means of discussion of high-intensity, dangerous cases, he wrote. Later that month, Dr. Mannion quoted to O'Byrne some Marine superiors who were calling troubled Marines, quote, worthless pieces of shit if they sought help.
Right. No, I believe that 100%, because you are there. It's like anything in America. It's in corporate America, and the military is no different than any other corporation. As long as you're going to produce for the corporation or for the military, they want you. The second you are broken and the company has broken you or the military has broken you, you need to die fast or just get out and disappear. Go live under a bridge. But we're not going to take care of you. For one thing, if they identified all these things are worse and people are teetering on the brink of going on a killing spree, then that means that their treatment is wrong. And what they're doing is not right.
If they're doing anything at all.
Right. So that means they are part of the problem.
But then again, I guess, at least analytically speaking, no treatment is a form of treatment. You see what I'm saying? If you've got a coal-fired stove and you're just burning coal and it's just blowing the smoke right out the roof, no pollution control is a form of pollution control insofar as you're just not interested in the pollution.
Oh, okay, yeah, gotcha.
And to this extent, we're trying to treat them.
We don't have a problem.
Right.
There is no problem.
I mean, you've seen the old joke about, I don't have a drinking problem. I drink, I fall down, I get up, no problem.
Right.
Isn't this the psychiatric equivalent of that?
Yeah, basically it is. It's the same thing. It's like the woman who comes in and she gets treated for depression when all she has to do is get rid of the jerk she's married to and she's not depressed anymore.
Yeah, isn't that called situational depression?
Yeah, situational. You're good. You need to go into the biz.
No, I don't think I could take it, Rick. Because this is my therapy.
It's just absolutely magnificent. But look, I don't want to keep any of your people. I know you got a lot of faithful who have been wanting to talk to you, so I'm going to get off pretty fast.
But dang, it's good to hear from you.
Oh, it's damn good to hear from y'all again, too. I've really felt bad lately about not being able to blow off steam like I was before. So, I don't know.
Well, you know, you've got a little valve right here whenever you feel like firing it back up. We're here when you are.
Sounds good. Remember this, WFAA, below debate. Please, go see it. These people were, look. Medina, the Hispanic woman who's running, she said, yes, we do need to secede from the union, and it needs to be bloody. We need to...
No.
Yes. The Hispanic woman says, we need to secede from the union, and it needs to be bloody. Whoa.
You know, that there's a level of cultural and historical ignorance there that is almost unplumbable.
It's complete denial of how bad Hispanics have been treated in Texas for 100 years.
Well, you know, I had that one activist analyst from Texas on when we were in D.C. last week, and she was talking about the sea change that would happen in Texas if the health care bill goes through and if the Medicaid buy-in is part of it, that, you know, that almost overnight millions upon millions of people would be added to the Medicaid rolls in Texas alone.
Yes, it would be magnificent. And then suddenly, you know, once people have got these other needs taken care of, they quit fighting. They quit stabbing each other in the back. They stop pulling each other off the ladder. Because the way it's set up in Texas now, every race, every group, every economic group, we're all trying to get up the same ladder, and we're being taught to pull the others off so we can get in front of them. If everybody has an equal chance, like self-care, and I mean, the amount of money you would save if everybody could buy into Medicare, then you wouldn't have to be fighting so hard to keep what you have. Now here's a strange thing. I mean, I don't know what your utility rates are like up there.
We live in hell.
Yeah, well, our electricity, mine usually runs for about, $160 a month. The last 2 months, it's been over $500 a month. Now, I don't know what yours is like, but, you know, we have natural gas right here and everything, so it should be cheaper. That is an enormous jump. That's three times what it was, just about. Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
It sounds like the Public Service Commission quietly snuck through a rate increase on you.
Yeah. Now, I'm a single person who uses night lights. I don't use regular lights, except because I just don't like lights, except in the room that I'm sitting. I turn off the electric heater. It's a pump, an air pump. And I turn it off during the day, so the heater's never working. I get home at night, even on the coldest day, it's never been below 61 in the house. And then I keep the house at 68. See, I'm very frugal about that stuff.
Yeah, you would. That sounds like the makings of a pretty doggone reasonable lifestyle.
Yeah. So here it is. I'm over here having to pay out, and I make good money, but I'm having to pay out $2,000 in a matter of actually 3 weeks. That's when the bills hit, basically. What about these other people who do not have insurance, who's trying to pay for their medical bills, who's trying to make a living, and they're coming up with this, you know, $500 a month, and they only make $600 or $700 a month? And that's just utilities, not food, not medication. So, yeah, if we get Medicare through, Medicare for all, if we get health care through, it would be a gigantic savings for people, and they could live better, and they could quit fighting among each other over the same resources.
Might solve a few problems, mightn't it?
It might indeed. Anyway.
Yeah, Fancy, who is a big fan of yours, notes via email, that would be socialism.
Thank God for socialism. I love socialist roads, socialist parks.
Yeah, like I said last night, I was mighty grateful for all that socialist salt they were spreading on the highways.
Thank God.
And those socialist snowplows, nothing like them.
And, you know, when you need them, that socialist fire department, God, that's because you and I are socialists, sir. Around here, they'd prefer to let their home burn down. I'm off the phone.
All right.
Fun, sir.
Take care, Rick. Good hearing from you, my brother.
Okay.
Later.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And onward we go. Or we will try. Open lines, by the way, if you want to jump in. 877-443-2366. Yeah. 877-443-2366. Sometimes the brain cells don't all connect. 877, the numeral 4, head on 304-658-3333. And feel free to be part of the process if you wish, because the lines that were tied up no longer are. All lines are open if you wish to jump into the process. you are more than welcome to do so. You know, of course, also email rolls into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. It's easy. I tell you what, since it's 9 minutes past 8 o'clock, we're 9 minutes into the third hour of the program, we have green news on the way tonight from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I always like to make sure that we get that in there simply because Brad and Desi do such a magnificent job. So we will take a little break and come back come back out. See, I'm doing three things at one time. That's the secret here. I'm trying to pull up a really cool bumper for the circumstances. And let's see. I had something in mind a little bit ago before we ran the Pretenders. Let me think just a minute. I really don't know. So, any suggestions? Ah, well, you know how it goes. But we'll do. I guess we'll do without a bumper right for now. We'll just go to a quick break and check out the green news. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. And we will be right back. Green news on the way on The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's Tuesday, February 2nd, 2010.
China takes the lead on clean energy while the U.S. stalls. Obama gives goodies for nuclear, plus coal protests in West Virginia.
All of that and more straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman of BradBlog.com.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
You are not going to get clean coal. That's like trying to manufacture dehydrated water.
You tell them, Mike Malloy. This is your Green News Report. Today's Green News Report is brought to you by Velvet Revolution's Stop the Chamber campaign. Concerned about the Supreme Court's recent ruling allowing unlimited corporate cash in American elections? So is VR. It's time for we, the people, to fight back against the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and their corporate cash laundering. Please sign on to StopTheChamber.com to help the citizens take on the unapologetic corporatists. Yes, it's your democracy. Use it or lose it. Visit StopTheChamber.com today. Okay, Desi Doyen, what do you have for us?
Lots of international action over the weekend. The United States has formally signed on to the Copenhagen Accord, the last-minute agreement negotiated by President Obama in December at the historic United Nations Climate Conference in Copenhagen. However, the U.S. commitment is contingent on the Senate passing comprehensive climate and clean energy legislation currently stalled in the Senate. While the accord itself lacks specific targets and timetables, all the major emitters in the world have retained the same pledges they made prior to the conference. The talks resume this summer with the next big UN climate conference in December, but the general feeling remains very pessimistic that an international treaty can be reached.
So let me get it straight. The U.S. has signed on to it, but until the Senate ratifies it, it actually means nothing, correct?
That's correct. Over the weekend, the world's top government officials and business executives gathered in Davos, Switzerland for the annual World Economic Forum. While talks this year focused on banking regulations and the global recession, the big buzz was the clean energy race and expectations that it will be the driving force behind economic growth in the the 21st century. Analysts predict clean energy jobs will be created on the order of some 20 million jobs in 20 years, with observers at the forum discussing which countries are going to get those jobs. According to the New York Times, the concern at Davos is palpable that China is edging ahead in that potentially lucrative growth sector of clean energy. In an interview with the Times, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina said, quote, "Every day that we delay trying to find a price for carbon is a day that China uses to dominate the green economy."
And so what is Lindsey Graham suggesting here? I mean, he is part of a party that has been against taking action in this country, that has been holding us up. What is he looking for?
Well, Senator Graham is actually bucking his party. He is part of a tripartisan group with Democratic Senator John Kerry and Independent Senator Joe Lieberman to create some kind of comprehensive clean energy legislation.
I understand that, but he's complaining about finding a price for carbon. What is he calling for?
Well, exactly what he wants is not clear just yet. He's been giving mixed signals in the press. Now, data shows that China has surpassed the rest of the world in clean energy manufacturing and is now building more wind turbines and solar panels than anyone else. China's government has been aggressively investing with plans to double its renewable energy in 10 years. That provides generous subsidies for Chinese consumers to install energy efficiency upgrades. And one of the ways that China funds their domestic clean energy initiatives is through a simple tax that is added to every electric bill in the country. That's a billion people.
You know, we have spent the last 10 years dithering, doing nothing on these issues, not taking the lead, and we have a party in Congress who is determined to keep us from moving ahead. You have to wonder what these guys are after, frankly, as we sit here and as we dither and watch China take the lead on technologies that we invented in this country, and as we otherwise fiddle as, pardon me, the earth burns.
The Obama administration is attempting to move forward on that, introducing the federal budget for 2011 yesterday. In regards to energy, the proposed budget increases funding for renewable energy technology research and development, along with loans and grants to help businesses create more clean energy jobs. But the proposed budget also boosts support for nuclear power plants.
Oh, I love nuclear power! It's like radioactive coal.
Even Stephen Colbert would love the new funding, tripling the amount set aside for taxpayer loan guarantees to back construction of new nuclear power plants, clearly to attract more Republican support for the president's climate and energy agenda.
And how's that working for you, Mr. Hopi Changey?
Finally, activists protesting mountaintop removal coal mining took to the trees, literally, to stop a coal mining company from blasting off the top of Coal River Mountain in West Virginia. Five protesters from the group Climate Ground Zero camped out high in the trees for 9 days, halting Massey Energy, the controversial coal mining company, from blasting off the top of the mountain and dumping the debris in valleys below. Massey instead has been blasting the protesters with air horns and 24-hour lights and other harassment. The activists voluntarily gave themselves up for arrest and faced jail time and substantial fines for trespassing and economic loss. Now Massey is seeking a permanent restraining order in federal court on all mining properties for all activist groups.
You know, there's been a hell of a fight going on out there in West Virginia, out in Appalachia. It's been going on quietly under the radar. These patriots are out there fighting like hell. The mainstream media has not been paying attention to that story. I hope someone tells their story. For more on that and the rest of our Green News today, stop by our website, greennews.bradblog.com. Follow us on Twitter. Download us on iTunes. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Brock.
And we roll headlong into the last two-thirds of Hour 3 of the program this evening. A couple of things that really ought to be got to tonight. Just because they made me want to scream. I'll cheat a little bit. This story, more properly, should probably be saved for tomorrow night, but God. These stories are all coming from Gawker. So maybe a grain of salt is in order. But at Gawker, they write in a post entitled "Scientologists in Haiti, a First-Hand Account." We've spoken to someone who traveled to Haiti on the Scientology plane and witnessed firsthand the ineptitude, quackery, and irresponsibility of the churches. No, come on, church. The church is a church is a church is a church, with all due respect to Gertrude Stein. Of the church's minions in a disaster zone. Here's the guy's account. I arrived at JFK last week, ready to go. I knew we were traveling with doctors and EMTs, but I didn't expect to see 50 Scientologists in their yellow shirts with volunteer minister on them. They were completely unprepared for going to a third world country, let alone a disaster zone. One girl was in designer cowboy boots. I asked her if she'd brought any sturdier footwear. Oh no, these'll be fine. I asked another guy what he'd packed, and he said he hadn't bothered to bring soap or toilet paper or food, but that he'd just buy whatever I needed. Port-au-Prince Airport. Said the relator, I couldn't break it to him. They had no place to stay and no supplies. Their idea was to use the ton of money that they had to buy food to distribute when they got there, but there was no food and no water. That was the point. By the time we arrived in Haiti after a stopover in Miami, we had missed 3 landing slots at the airport. Aid agencies, genuine aid agencies from other countries were being turned away, refused permission to land, but we still got a slot straight away. The guy who ran our charter seemed to think that the Scientologists had some real influence with the U.S. government who were assigning the slots. The doctors and EMTs in our party headed straight downtown to start working. The Scientologists had nowhere to go and nowhere to put us up the big yellow tent they'd brought for touch healing people in. They went to the UN and managed to get on their list of approved NGOs somehow. That meant they could set up in the UN grounds. But they had no one who spoke Creole, and they brought the weirdness of touch healing into a very superstitious society. They'd leave the tent and come into the general hospital downtown and try healing people. One of the doctors and one of the nurses told me that the wounded started coming to them to tell them they didn't want to be treated by the people in the yellow shirts. One nurse told me that the Scientologists actually caused harm. They gave food to people who were scheduled to go into surgery. That then led to complications in the operating theater. On the way back, the plane stopped in Miami and did not go on to New York, stranding all the doctors and EMTs and journalists who expected to get back. After much fighting, the Scientologist representative agreed to fly any of the EMTs that absolutely couldn't afford the ticket on JetBlue from Fort Lauderdale. I heard there were complications, but had bought my own ticket because I was fed up with their weirdness. When you think about the struggles that Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, the absolute miseries that they've gone through trying to get aid to people so desperate and so mired in agony. And then you think about some yellow-shirted idiot wanting to do touch healing. It is quite enough to make you want to scream. But that's not the end of the story. A second plane load of Scientology volunteer ministers and medics got to Haiti by the direct efforts of John Travolta. You know, John Travolta is a big aviation buff. and he flew a 707 plane load of Scientologists to Haiti with wife Kelly Preston by his side. They, this from the paper The Age, John Travolta has landed his own jet in Haiti carrying relief supplies and a team including doctors and Scientology ministers. The 55-year-old actor flew the Boeing 707 from Florida with 4 tons of ready-to-eat military rations and medical supplies for earthquake victims. Finally figured that part out. Among those accompanying Travolta is his wife, actress Kelly Preston. The Church of Scientology says the pair plan to return home after unloading their passengers and supplies. But this is a real Ginsu commercial. But wait, there's more. A little bit of underground, a little bit of, you know, sort of underground information leaking out. Saying many Scientologists genuinely think that only they can help in an emergency. If you ever watch that weird video with Tom Cruise, he said, I often go by car wrecks on the freeway, and I see people trying to help, but then I realize that as a Scientologist, I'm the only one who can. Yep, not the doctors, not the nurses, not the emergency responders, not the EMTs. No. Only the Scientologists can truly help. There is an email going around apparently that says thanks from a Scientologist. Thanks much. Fantastic expansion is happening. Thanks for being a part. I hope to have news for you daily. One big thing happening now is with Haiti. We're going back there with our Global Pioneers team to deliver seminars to over 1,500 people. You remember how pissed off we got at what was it called? The purveyor or you know, the Electro Bible that would deliver the readings of the Bible to up to 300 people in Creole or some such. You know, dropping 2,000 of these things from that weird-ass outfit in New Mexico. Yeah. Remember how infuriating that was, knowing that there was such a desperate need for food and for water, for essential medical supplies, things like sutures, things like bandages, you know, not even the complicated stuff. The very, you know, bottles of Bactine, for God's sakes, mercurochrome and whatnot, Betadine, were all at crisis levels. But some right-wing religious fundamentalist group was dropping audio Bible transmitters. Well, according to this note, the Scientologist says, we're going back there with our Global Pioneers team to deliver seminars to over 1,500 people. We're going for 1,500 hours of auditing in 1 week, and hopefully that many starts. More incredible news. If you know anyone that can assist, I'm trying to get help so we can leave in 1.5 weeks, and this may be highlighted at a future in management event. Thanks very much. Now, of course, you understand that in any religion, whether it be Scientology, the Roman Catholic Church, the Hinduism, Islam, what have you, the word help means money. If you know anyone that can assist, I'm trying to get help. So that means if you know anyone with money, I am trying to get money so we can leave in 1.5 weeks, yada, yada, yada. I can't understand why the Scientologists would have any interest in Haiti, simply because the Haitian people have no money. And Scientology, in addition to being as kooky a religion as any other religion out there, is also a pyramid scheme. You know, with a sort of Calvinism wrapped up in some tin foil with some sparkles thrown on and a few weirdo pseudoscience words. Thetans! But there's no money. There's no money in Haiti. Unless maybe they're going to down to give seminars to the other aid agencies. Well, see, you're trying to help, but you can't really help because the only people who can help are Scientologists. You want to help, don't you? and then the press release from Global Pioneers talking about what Scientology has done since the earthquake. We got the U.S. government to include us as a part of the joint command of U.S. and U.N. military working with the five approved NGOs under the U.S. Southern Command. This entitled us to land and operate a command post out of the airport in Port-au-Prince. Oh, my God. So let's recap. Pat Robertson's phony front group charity is an approved NGO on the list. You could even find it, I believe, by going through whitehouse.gov to the Red Cross site, and boom, there they were. And apparently the Scientologists are there as well. Another highlight from this Scientology email. First ever chartered Scientology flight. First ever combined collaboration project with VMs, doctors, EMTs, and other humanitarian groups working side by side to help Haiti. Sponsored and coordinated by the Church of Scientology VMs, volunteer ministers. Over 300 doctors, EMTs, and volunteer ministers sent to Haiti in two chartered flights to Haiti, with more coming. Over $100,000 worth of medical equipment sent to Haiti. Thousands of calls and emails from people wanting to help. Thousands of dollars worth of food and water sent. VMs, volunteer ministers, put in charge of all doctors and supplies that come into the airport, registration and distribution. Volunteer minister base set up in Dominican Republic to coordinate and help furnish supplies, food, water, gas, and volunteer ministers to and from Haiti. This base is in full-time operation. Three van loads of supplies and a team of Mexican volunteer ministers have been sent to Haiti so far, as well as establishing a communication line to make it possible to communicate easily from Haiti to Dominican Republic. The Dominican Republic government's Ministry of Public Health's agreement to work together to help with their difficulties and to get supported by the volunteer ministers and our medical contacts and to unite resources. And then this. The key here now is to reach as many people as possible with our tech and bringing more aid to victims so that they can get relief. Once this is under control, to start the rebuilding efforts. We have resources, contacts, people, ideas, groups, and more support coming. We need to band together and give these people all the help they need. Everyone can make a difference. This is a time now when the whole world is getting involved, and we are leading the way. Let us give it all that we've got. Lives are counting on it. Sweet Jesus. Buddha, any god, holy smoke. What's the best way to put it? That is sick making. Mind boggling. Real aid isn't reaching because of volunteer ministers in designer cowboy boots who didn't bring any soap or toilet paper. And, you know, that business about, well, you know, I'll just wait till I get to Port-au-Prince and I'll buy it in the airport. There's sort of an object lesson there, isn't there, about fiat currency or about the nature of currency in general. It wouldn't matter if you flew in. If you flew in plane loads like we did to Iraq, 18 semi tractor trailer loads of shrink wrapped $100 bills. It wouldn't matter if we did that in Haiti. There's nothing that it will buy. And if money doesn't buy anything, then money itself becomes useless. But that's probably a little too much for your average Scientologist to comprehend. Sheesh. And then this. Really. Beauty is only skin deep, but stupid goes clean to the bone. I'm talking, of course, about Michelle Bachmann. And, you know, this is one of those, by the time I'm done with this, you'll understand why I'm saying what I'm about to say. This is one of those moments that I'm just so doggone grateful for the interaction that happens on the horn. If you're a horn listener, you know that what you're about to hear coming from the incredibly addled and at least semi-psychotic mouth of Michelle Bachmann, you know that it's a total bug spray simply because you've been listening to the horn and you've occasionally heard conversations with our dear friend Robert in Kitakyushu, Japan. And you've heard him talk about the difference between the medical system in, say, Japan and the United States. Well, I offer you Minnesota Repiglican, Michelle Bachmann, friend of Jesus. She gave a little speech somewhere where people let her actually get up next to a microphone and open her mouth and let the bats fly out. She gave a little speech yesterday in which she fabricated a mysteriously anonymous Japanese man who merely approached her on the street and warned her of the devilish details and the horrors of that socialized medicine in the land of the rising sun. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Well, here, let's just do it. Let's get it going. Crazy.
I firmly believe empower people to deal with those decisions. And I ask my staff, let's put those three ideas, buy any insurance policy you want anywhere in the United States, pay for it with your own tax-free money, fully deduct your health care expenses on your income tax return. That isn't over 2,000 pages. That's 32 pages long for a bill. And I think that... take over and control, or empowering the individual. I say, why not at least start with an alternative like the one I just mentioned to you, and then from there go and correct the rest. Bob ran into me in the hall in Washington, D.C., and he said, he pulled out of his wallet and said, Michelle, I want to show you something. I've heard you talk about health.
Now, wait. Okay. But this, I think this is where the crazy starts.
Here on TV, and I think you should know this, and I want you to tell this story everywhere you go. And he showed me a little card that was about this big, and he said, this is my card from when I lived in Japan. And Japan had the government take over of health care. And in Japan, you sure have a card all right, but to wait in and get health care is almost impossible. You get on a list, and you wait, and you wait, and you wait. But he said, this is something that people don't know. In Japan, people have stopped voicing their opinion on health care. There's things that are wrong with Japanese health care, but people started voicing. Well, why is that, I asked. He said it's because they know that they would get on a list and they would get health care. They wouldn't get in. They wouldn't get seen. And so,
oh, do you hear the murmuring in the audience? Oh, that's terrible. Oh, that's just awful. Just eating it right up with a big spoon. People are afraid of voicing their concerns because they'll get on a list.
People are afraid. They're afraid to speak back to government. They're afraid to say anything. Is that what we want for our future? That takes us to gangster government at that point.
Wait a minute. Gangster government? Isn't that how this program started? Weren't we talking about the Virginia delegate Bob Marshall saying that having some sort of health care reform in this country was reminiscent of paying protection to mobsters? I do believe it is. Do you see how the message machine works in Repiglican land and how they all stay on message all day long? The talking points are formulated about this time of the evening, and they are waiting on desks around this country by 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning to be disseminated to a credulous public that's afraid of the smart people. Mobster, gangster government out of the mouth of Michelle Bachmann yesterday, and mobsters demanding protection money out of a seemingly unrelated low-rent member of the House of Delegates in Virginia. There's 1,000 miles between those two people. How could they? This is not a boating accident. Those are the same talking points issuing from entirely separate and yet viscerally connected right-wing mouths. I won't say minds because there aren't much in the way of minds involved here. It's strictly monkey see, monkey do. You know, in the minds of the right wing. But, you know, this is another one of those cases of things just being taken as gospel. If Michelle Bachmann comes up and says, you know, I was approached on the streets of Washington the other day, and I was approached by an alien who told me that there on planet Zulop, they have health care reform too, and now they're afraid to speak out against their Zulopian government because the Zulopian government will put them on a list and they won't get any health care. That's gangster government, and we don't want that here. And the right wing sits there and says, definitely, I don't want no gangster government. No, I'd rather just die in misery like God wants me to. Hallelujah, praise Jesus. Yeah, of course, Michelle went on to say that
a government takeover of health care is the crown jewel of socialism.
Where the hell did I hear that? Oh, wait a minute. I was sitting in a traffic snarl in southern Pennsylvania listening to a rerun of Rush Limbaugh from last week when he said, my friends, whether it was Pol Pot, Stalin, Hitler, Mao Zedong, the first thing they did is they aimed at health care, they took over the health care system, and they killed off the enlightened elderly people. This is message management on in absolute goose step, lockstep precision. And we wonder why we're having a problem. And the thing is, no, she didn't offer any sort of substantiation for the Japanese man or the alien from planet Zulop. Because in right-wing world, she doesn't have to. Just like Pam Tebow can say, well, you know, I was having a problem pregnancy in the Philippines, and the doctor there said, this is a problem pregnancy, and, you know, you probably ought to terminate it. And news organizations just say, Pam Tebow said she, without ever even attempting to verify whether it's true or not. You know, true as in factual. And Michelle Bachmann doesn't have to provide any sort of background either, or any sort of verification. She can just say it to the wingnuts out in the crowd who want to believe the worst that... And they do.
I've got a 32-page bill, not a 4,000-page bill.
You know what? Under that reasoning, she would like to drive an automobile with a 32-page owner's manual instead of a 200-page owner's manual. The only problem is, in that 32-page owner's manual, you leave out stuff like the schedule for when you change the oil or what your tire inflation should be. And you wind up eventually finding yourself severely wanting in very basic information for how to make things work. The bill is long because the problem is big. God, but I hate right-wingers.
We need simple government.
Well, we're not a simple country. It is a little bit complicated being a country of this size, this breadth, and this scope.
But it ought to be simple. I ought to be able to understand it.
Well, yeah, bud, you should. And you could if you had bothered to further your own education. But you didn't. Instead, you sat around listening to preachers and demagogues like Michelle Bachmann, and you think that that passes for knowledge when it doesn't. And the only problem with all of that is, bud, you're killing me. You're not just killing yourself, you're killing me. And my friends and my loved ones. With your stupidity. And Buster, your rights end where my nose begins. And you do not have the right to stupid me out of a reasonable chance at the pursuit of happiness. But that is precisely and expressly what is going on in this country when a freak like Michelle Bachmann can just make up little Japanese men coming up to her on the streets and saying, oh, this is my old Japanese health insurance card, but I enlist. I have to come to America to get health care. Bullshit! But again, thanks to what the horn is and what you all have helped build, we have pre-existing archives of conversations from people in Japan who can tell us that their system works. But that's just us. Anybody can go and find that archive who wants to. But where's the rest of the effort to put the lie to a freak like Michelle Bachmann? That's my only question. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Yes.
Hey, it's Ken again.
Hey, Ken, what's up?
2 days in a row. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. I like this.
Another beautiful day out here in Hawaii. A little bit windy, but really nice. Man, you're hitting all the points that I wanted to hit. I don't even get a chance to keep hitting them. The only thing more is, it just goes all the way to the city council.
What do you mean?
Well, like, we have to start electing city council straight from the city council, the dog catcher, everything, because they've influenced our courts, they've made, you know, even when we vote for things, they just say, oh, well, we don't exactly like the way you voted for that, so we'll change the law, we'll reword it. But yet, we don't get them to vote on the rewording, you know, things like that. It's like, who was that just called in about their electric bill going from 100-something to 500?
No, that's horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner calling from Texas.
Okay, Texas is doing that to somebody? I expect it out here.
Well, yeah, because you're sort of resource limited along those lines at present.
Totally monopoly. What option do we have? You know, and somebody tried to say you had options there on the mainland in some places, but 90% of the country you don't have an option to buy power from nobody except for your local power company.
Right, and I'm absolutely at the mercy of the power company when they go to the Public Service Commission, which is supposed to represent my interests and not the power company's. And the power company says, well, you know, we've got to do, we've got to have a rate increase. The cost of coal went up, and we got debt. And the whole thing is just a dodge for the fact that Well, you know what we really need to do is declare a dividend this quarter of a little more substance than the last one, and we want to soak it out of the people's hide. And the Public Service Commission says, cool by us, let's do it. Sorry, not yelling at you, but it's incredibly frustrating.
I totally understand, and that's the way we all feel. And then the media is trying to portray it as, oh, Obama didn't go to the center enough. What the fuck are they talking about?
Yeah, what center? What? There's no center. Yeah, but I understand that. Yeah, the what the comes out of me every now and then too. So don't sweat it.
We wanted troops in Iraq. We wanted, you know, healthcare for only the rich Republicans.
And you got Daniel. About? Yeah, and Daniel Pipes is out there saying, you know, if Barack Obama really wants to make himself a transformative president, what he needs to do is bomb Iran some.
I heard that today before. Already too. Yeah.
It's lunacy, Ken. It is.
It's boiling point. I don't understand it. I don't know. And it's so blatant. That's what I don't understand. It's so blatant that they're lying. And then people, like I was saying yesterday, why don't they call the... All you have to do is state all these facts. But I guess, then again, the Republicans think facts are stupid things, stubborn things.
There you go.
I mean, it's really frustrating.
Yes, crazy-making. Head-banging on the wall-making. Yes.
Yeah, without even listening to my good music, I can head bang now.
Yeah, the rhythm's just a little off, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's I don't know, it's more that country rhythm. I'm sorry, I don't, you know, it's the fake country. There's real countries and there's Republican country.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you mean Republican country, like songs about putting boots in people's rear ends and stuff like that, and hymns to the Statue of Liberty. And
with it. Some of the country lately has been blatantly racist.
Sure. Because it, you know, every song that gets, and whether it's country or so-called pop or whatever, it's all subjected to focus group testing before it's ever put out for mass consumption. And you know, if the country said, you know, I want some more of that racist music, my God, you know, that's what they'll get.
Yeah.
It's horrifying. Ken, it's awful good to hear from you, my friend. Two nights in a row. This is wonderful.
Real quick on that, Michelle Bachmann.
Sure.
How can you trust anybody that goes on Alex Jones? I know he's got some of the right things, but the way he presents it is totally wrong.
I'm sorry. It's just a hustle. To me, it's just another hustle.
That's what I mean. You're trying to hustle people on misery.
And fear. Don't forget fear.
Yeah. Well, what was the old word for that? Huckster, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
There Will Be Blood. Watch that movie.
Oh, that's one of my favorite movies.
You know?
Done now.
Using the name of Christianity, always.
I drink your milkshake. Oh, what a movie that was. What a performance by Daniel Day-Lewis. Great point, Ken. You take care and have a wonderful afternoon. All right.
See you now.
Bye.
Aloha, Bob.
Aloha. I got my second aloha of the night there. A couple of quick emails. One from Ron in Raleigh. Bob, don't these poor put-upon people in Haiti have enough crap to deal with? Do they really need the absolute insanity of the Church of Scientology? Save us from our saviors. Ain't that about the truth? And also, going back to the don't ask, don't tell discussion, William says, like Mike Malloy has said, if you are in battle and there's no one to cover your back and a soldier rushes in to do so, is anybody going to say, hey, you're gay? If a doctor's saving your life, would anyone ask if they were gay? If someone was pulling you out of a car wreck, who would ask? How about a fireman pulling you out of a burning house? It's all the same thing, says William, and it's true. You know how they say there's no such thing as an atheist in a foxhole? I don't think there's a homophobe in them either. But that's just me, and I'm a little crazy. I have, as he notes, a note in from Robert in Japan. Hi, Bob. You conjured me up. I had to respond to your Michelle Bachmann comment. Now, what is this thing about a list? What list? Well, see, Robert, Michelle Bachmann, in her batshit crazy world, there's a list of people who criticize the Japanese healthcare system, and once you're on that list, you can't get healthcare anymore because they're punishing you. You know, we're talking insanity here. So Robert says, now what is this thing about a list? What list? Like, you have to go to City Hall before you go to the hospital in Japan? What? No. The reality, Robert says, is that for a public hospital, the wait is no more than 10 minutes. If there's a flu bug going around, maybe 15. No care is ever denied. My insurance, about $250 for my family. My wife has to buy her own as she has a full-time job and makes too much money. Has never gone up, at least not that I've ever noticed it, over the past 15 years. We have a few new hospitals, and some of them are private, but in those, the wait times can be 30 minutes or more. But the cost is not that much more than a public. There was nothing but shock here about the cost of my giving a kidney to my sister. People in Japan just could not understand the logic and rationale for the expenses. Somebody make a note of this comment from Robert. So that the next time we've got, when as it inevitably will, this batshit crazy babbling from Michelle Bachmann starts to get legs and traction, and we start going, what about the Japanese system? Somebody make a note of what night, what show this was, so we can go back and refer to actual reportage from on the ground about the Japanese healthcare system. This is one of those moments when I wish we were all just a little closer together so one of us could go to a Michelle Bachmann press conference and stand up and look at her and say, sister, you are either lying or you are just plain nuts. Because the for-profit media will not make that confrontation. That simple. Back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, Bob, it's Dave up in Northwest.
Hey, Dave, what's up?
California.
Yeah, I got a couple of minutes. Let's try to get a call in.
Well, I think you're doing a wonderful thing, and I think you try to make people aware. You cause us to think, and we so much need to do that. I think, you know, for people to see what we're up against, it sometimes appears overwhelming. I mean, can it be repaired? Is the damage too much? I think these right-wingers that you speak of, they are what you'd call sociopathic. They are people who take, they exploit us. They want to find ways to use us. And they're doing so much harm to so many, and they probably don't know it. They don't they feel like what they're doing is probably a good thing. But they are doing just unrepairable damage to the masses. And you see that. You say it, and you make it clear. The thing that I have been trying to get, my main point, is that they got themselves in positions of power by cheating. They rig elections.
No argument from me.
No. But I don't hear that. You know, you back there with a radio conference there in Washington, I think we need to be hearing that. It's so critical. We've lost our democracy if they get away with this trick. If they can just venture into these computers, voting machines, flip votes, put in power whoever they want, democracy is a dead thing. And that's got to be recognized. It's got to trigger the realities. It's got to have us doing something about it. I'm not hearing it. I'm not hearing it. I think you're saying I'm aware of it, but really, like, what in the hell can people do? Our country has been stolen. Our democracy has been stolen. And the people that have done it are the worst of all people. You speak of them. You're Michelle Bach.
Dave, look, I'm not trying to foster anybody's paranoia or fear or anything. They mean to kill us. This isn't about some sort of little absence or presence of a Japanese no health care list. Every day that they move to deny health care and access to coverage, they guarantee the death of 1/365 of 45,000 people, because that's how many people die every year for want of access to coverage. Now, that's not me being paranoid. Those are real numbers with real people, real gravestones behind them. They mean to kill us.
Well, I think that is, as I see it, whether we live or die is kind of irrelevant to them. What they want is to maximize their power, to take from us everything that they can. And if they allow medicine to be made available to the poor, to the working classes, it's less money in their pocket, and that they care about very much. If we die, that's sort of an irrelevant side issue to them, is the way I see it. But
well, I think you're right, Dave. I've got to run on, but I thank you for putting the fine point on things.
Thank you so much for everything you do, Bob.
Thank you, Dave. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. From Northern California, that's our buddy Dave. And one last call if we... Oh, you quit on me. See, I was going to try. But we will end the show something close to on time. I'm 20 seconds over already, but yeah, we'll figure out a way. This coming in from Reverbo, basically... life gets too close to, you know, life gets to, reality gets too close to humor sometimes, and when that happens, it usually happens over at the Onion. Headline, area homosexual saves four from fire. Heroic neighbor praised, gay. And it's, go read it. It's funny in a, I wish these guys weren't so close to reality sort of way at the Onion. They're geniuses over there. They're just geniuses. The piece the other day with the comments from the Bald Eagle, just go to the Onion and read it all. Just I worship at those people's shrine. And thanks to you, all of you, for making sure that things like this Groundhog Day edition of The Horn happens. It's ground, and lo and behold, you know, fighting back these right wing talking points that happen over and over and over and just get magnified inside the for-profit media's little echo chambers. It's Groundhog Day. I've been haunted by that movie for over a week now. And this is the punctuation on it. But thank you for supporting and contributing to The Horn and making sure that when we've got clips of insanity from Michelle Bachmann, there's somewhere for Robert in Kitakyushu to write into to say, that woman's nuts. I'm paraphrasing broadly. That woman's wrong. That woman's not telling the truth. Thank you for making that happen. It's the second day of February. We need all the help we can get. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. There is also a snail mail address if you prefer to work in that fashion. We operate month to month. Not a month is guaranteed to us. But we keep at this. Thank you to John Fox, to Peter Godbold, to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Since 2002, literally the home of liberal talk on the Internet. No one will ever quite know the massive number of hours that Ben Birch has put into the process or the hours that have gone into all of this by John Fox, by Peter Godbold, Lottie and Sue in the chat room, and Sue working on videos, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan, our blogger, Texas Betsy. Stunning to contemplate. And I am forever grateful, as we are all grateful to one another. Thanks, as ever, go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. Drop them a line sometime and tell them how glad you are they're doing what they do. It means a lot. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Hey,
Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! What we didn't get through last night, maybe we'll get through tonight, plus some other stuff, new stuff, that kinds of stuff. We've sort of got fresh morans left over from Moran Monday. You never know. There's too much stuff out there to deal with in any one given night. We've got some follow-up stuff on, and, you know, I hate to even fool with it. It just seems so tawdry and slippery and slimy. But there is some follow-up stuff on the Sarah Palin nonsense fraud money laundering operation that she's running. Got a laugh over at Political Carnival has sort of figured out who the ghost-writing bloggers are on Caribou Barbie's Facebook page. You know, because Caribou Barbie's Facebook page doesn't look like it's been written in crayon. So therefore that means that it's not really Sarah Palin writing it. So we can talk about that. We most assuredly can. And in the grand scheme of things, it may wind up being the lighter side of the discussion this evening. Because there's all kinds of creepiness, nastiness out there. Something that came this way by listener Mike was featured on Democracy Now and probably deserves some discussion. America's secret Afghan prisons investigation unearths new U.S. torture site, abuse allegations in Afghanistan. Hey, why did I chuckle? That's just sickening. But, yeah, in case you were wondering, it's still going on. Maybe not as bad, but it's definitely still going on. Then there's the story of the story of the Scientology missionary volunteers going to Haiti. That's another beautiful one. I guess all kinds of bad thetans in bad thetans just banging around, or whatever it is, planet witch knot. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's just fraud, just another religious fraud. But they're down in Haiti mucking things up. So we've got that going for us. What else? How about a leftover moran, like I mentioned? You know, morans... Right-wing morans, they stay forever fresh, at least in my book. Their lunacy...